I think they like you, Steve.
Thursday, okay? Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Good morning, 720 WGN. It's Steve Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman. Dave Ennett is here. Mary Vanderbilt, Mary Sandberg, Steve Grzanich. Steve Cochran on his way, Mary. He is stuck in traffic on the Ike. And this is a real deal. This has been something that's been a struggle for many commuters from the western suburbs this morning. What's going on there?
We had a car in the ditch at Wolf, and also some backups from road work in that area on the east-west on 88. So he's stuck in that, too. So and it's raining.
Yeah,
so that
and it's
adds
raining.
To the fun.
Yeah, of course. Everyone's got to slow down and act like they've never
seen. Is there
seen
any road that is not under construction in this
city? It's crazy. Everything is under construction, and it's like just happened within the last week. I don't get it. Usually it's beginning of summer. It seems like it's the end of summer catch-up.
Was there one of those, I know in the past sometimes the state, the budget has called a halt to construction and then it kicks back in?
I don't think
no,
so.
It wasn't one of those?
Yes.
And I live in the Chicago neighborhood, the West Loop, and it is booming right now. There's a lot of building there, and they have construction all summer long. They've had construction projects every other block, and so I'm so used to when you say, "Oh, there's so much construction," I'm like, "Oh man, I'm used." I just feel like any street has an orange cone. That's just
what
you
have. Yeah, and it just seems like they don't coordinate.
No, that's exactly right.
With the alternates,
they took the bridges out along the Kennedy. You know, they've been doing this big burn interchange project. So the Monroe Bridge,
Jane Burn,
all that stuff is out, and then they start all these other projects that are these big high rises that will divert traffic to other ways, and they didn't think about the fact that those bridges are out. So now it almost sends you in a strange, vicious cycle in the way that there's no way
your
out
GPS
of that area.
Keeps telling you to, you know, reroute. Yeah. It's like, stop
just
it. I can't go this way.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe this is something we should have asked the mayor yesterday about. Is there anybody at the Department of Buildings or Revenue that is in charge of scheduling these projects?
Yeah,
or is it just
nice
like who's
to get
got
somebody
money?
On
right.
to talk about that, or
yeah,
Streets
right?
and Sands or whatever, but yeah.
Because it seems like they're not paying attention to how many projects are happening.
I forgot a few weeks ago that you could not get off the Kennedy at Congress to go eastbound.
Oh, right,
so
right.
I got on the Eisenhower, and then to circle back around was like impossible because all the streets are closed and you can't get there.
I got lost in the parking garage today.
Okay, that's bad.
Well, I couldn't get into my usual entrance because Wacker was blocked off with this new stuff they're doing on the drive. And so I ended up in the wrong parking garage at the wrong hotel.
Oh, no. Mary, that same thing happened to me yesterday because they were paving my entrance, and I was so panicked. I thought
too.
I was in the south side. I want to get to the north side, and I could not figure out how to get over there.
I was driving around, but luckily it let me out because I wasn't down there long enough to accumulate any payment plan.
Make you
so
pay
I go,
$15.
Oh, good. They let me out. Yes. So I'm like, now where do I go? Okay.
Yeah. Well, it seems like if you're in that traffic right now on the Ike, we know that Steve is there as well and that we feel for you because there's nothing worse than an accident in construction in your morning commute. So if we can bring any joy in the program this morning to you in that terrible traffic.
Yeah, he should be fine now, by the way. He passed it all. So.
All right, good.
Just watch out for construction debris because I can speak firsthand.
Dave
I think that's what it was. I had a flat tire. Yesterday, thanks to Mary Sandberg Boyle, she saved my life, helped me get my car to a shop so I could get a new tire put on. But
I'm putting together a video of Dave using the Fix-A-Flat. It'll be posted on WGN Radio.
He fixed my flat with.
Well, this
that.
Was not fixable. Really.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, there was. We could hear the air pouring out of the tire through this metal like spiky thing that was in his tires.
So.
Yeah.
Where'd you run over that on the Kennedy?
No, I think somewhere somewhere up north, maybe on the spur.
Oh, okay. So. Oh, yeah, there's road work on the spur, too.
Gosh, I think we've got I think we've got our topics for the show today. 4 hours of traffic construction woes here on the Steve Cochran Show. All right, let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't kick. Get your kicks. With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
As we heard from Vic Vaughn, and Steve Grzanich has a story as well. Today, Jason Van Dyke, the police officer who is being charged with murder for the killing of for Laquan McDonald. It will be in court today on contempt charges. The judge is essentially questioning or will decide whether or not he broke the gag rule on doing interviews with the Chicago Tribune. This is a big deal and could have ramifications for the Van Dyke defense in the sense that he would be in violation of bail. Is that what that is, Steve?
It would be a violation of his bail, and he could be ordered to be behind bars while the trial's going on.
Jeez, because essentially this was a strategy. This was last week where the strategy from the defense was to humanize Jason mm-hmm. Van Dyke, but that was in the face of the judge who said, gag order on this. I don't want interviews. I don't want any sort of outside media. And the defense said, we'll take our chances. We'll roll the dice on this. I mean, I kind of get it. If the judge said, don't do it, and they did it because of to essentially tamper with the jury pool, I can understand where the judge would want to have did you say contempt charges? Is that what you say? Or just hold them in contempt?
Yeah, it would be held in contempt. Well, it would be violation of this order, which, you know, you don't want to do that with a judge. The other thing is the timing. I mean, look at the timing. They could have done the interview, you know, weeks and weeks ago. They did it just in the last week or so, right ahead of jury selection, which is going on right now, so...
And they continue as the wife of Jason Van Dyke was on Windy City Live and continues to tell the story of the family, which is an important story to this, to show his character. But the judge had said, please do not do this, and they're doing it anyway. What I have a bigger issue with, I don't have an issue with that, and I don't think he should be put in jail for it. I think the bigger issue is on the media side, on the Tribune, and I think it was in cooperation with WBEZ. They gave some strange concessions to the Van Dyke camp. In terms of giving the questions in advance, letting the lawyer in the room, letting him essentially answer the questions the way he wanted to answer them, which, you know, in terms
like
of
under advisement.
Usually that's never in my career. I've never given questions in advance. I've never been in a point where I'm like, this is so important. This guest is so important. Here are the four questions I'm going to ask. You can answer them however you want. We'll stick to the script. It seems like they went for the viral hit over journalistic integrity, and that's something that should be discussed, and I think it's buried in this story. So we'll see. All right, next. Top Chicago architects are lining up to compete for the massive O'Hare International Airport expansion project, a key priority. Mayor Rahm Emanuel before he leaves office. This is a big story because we could see some really great architects who can come in and really push this airport forward. But it's also a big story because it reminds us of how many projects are just starting or just under just the beginning phases in the Emanuel administration and how they could be tenuous in the fact that there's going to be a new mayor in 6 months.
He said that he told his cabinet and all his staff that get ready because these next six or nine months is going to be crazy because he's getting things done. So
But I mean, someone brought up yesterday, what about the Elon Musk tunnel?
Oh yeah,
that's a good that is a straight up Rahm Emanuel handshake kind of deal.
Yeah, what about the Riverwalk, the extension of the Riverwalk expansion and rehab?
Yeah,
down toward us. Is that going to continue?
Exactly, and there's so much more with capital projects and CPS
and the Obama Museum. Did you mention
Obama
that
Museum? That's what I mean. There's
a
lot.
He said that yesterday.
Yeah.
That was still on his list. I know Steve Cochran has poo-pooed that Elon Musk tunnel, so maybe if he gets a vote, they'll take that off the agenda.
There were some questions about whether that was really going to happen anyway.
Yeah. So. He thinks it's unnecessary. I think Steve said we don't need a faster train there. So.
And wasn't construction supposed to begin right now on that, too?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if that continues. You can find that whole interview with Mayor Emanuel we did yesterday, which got great news coverage. The Tribune wrote it up at WGNradio.com. Next. Trump says New York Times should turn anonymous author of the op-ed over to the government at once. Called him and most of his administration have called out this anonymous op-ed or this anonymous staffer as a coward. Now, this is a very interesting media story as well, because it's very rare, if not, I think, four times in New York Times history, where they will publish an anonymous op-ed. This op-ed, which was published yesterday, the day before, essentially says that Trump is a madman, and they, being part of his administration, are protecting the country from him.
I was just going to say, you know, is it? I think that I saw one story yesterday about whether or not this is some low-level senior official or whether this is a cabinet member.
Right. I was surprised in the cast they were calling out Mike Pompeo. Yeah.
Doesn't it have to be, though, somebody really senior to for the New York Times to have done this, like a cabinet member or somebody point. Kelly or
yeah. Because the New York Times says they know who the writer is. Yeah. That's why they chose to do it anonymously, because of job security. And so you're right. If it was someone who didn't have the clout, the New York Times was worried about if they were, if there were any sort of coverage issues for them. I don't know if they would go out on a limb if it was some low-level staffer. You're right.
I think the Trump administration not to be able to tell, but based on what they said, who it is, like too many people are seeing that's a bad sign.
The op-ed, in my opinion, and just in my, I was like, all right, this is unnecessary. I don't know if it's necessary to go in and tell us that you've got our back, you've got America's back, and we'll check the president. Okay, well, I think there's a lot more pressing issues for the country than whether or not the president needs to be checked by his own administration, but we'll see how it plays out. Warner Brothers and its corporate siblings, HBO and Turner Broadcasting, include plans to increase the number of women and people of color involved in their movies and TV shows. That's good, finally. I think that's a feel-good story of the day. I saw also that there are plans by CBS and Redstone to replace Leslie Moonves at CBS. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Roy Moore sues Sacha Baron Cohen for $95 million. Hilarious.
Come on.
Over Who is America? I think that's just publicity. I don't know how you are going to win a lawsuit against on the fact that you were actually the one who was the source who, even if you were tricked to say the things, you said the things that were said. So I don't know how he wins on that. And frankly, that's probably more political posturing than anything else. But I have yet to see. I've only seen clips on. I don't have Showtime. But I've heard great things about the show, and I am a Sacha Baron Cohen fan. I think he's hilarious. So
it is funny how he transforms himself into these characters. He doesn't even look like himself.
We didn't even think we were watching the right thing, because we were waiting for him. We were like, well, when's he going to be? It's like, geez, it's really impressive.
I hope at the end of his career, when it's all said and done, that he gets the respect and props for being a master comedian and character actor, because he has done 7 or 8 or 9 characters now that are iconic. I mean, Borat and even Ali G. It's so great. And he continues. And I always say, how is he going to be able to do this kind of show? And he proves it once again that he can, like a chameleon, change the way he looks and be able to continue to do the kind of gotcha comedy. I think it's great. And finally, where has Steve Perry been? The former Journey frontman who walked away from stardom is returning in October with a solo album, Traces. It breaks 20 years of silence. 20 years? It's been 20 years of silence?
Just a small town girl.
That's painful for Super Joe to play. He does not like, I think you also agree, Justin, as a Sox fan. You don't like Don't Stop Believin'.
I'm much more of a Thunderstruck guy. You like this, Joe. I was in Cleveland. And we went to a burger place right by Progressive Field, and it was right before a game. It was like 6:30, and we realized the Indians were playing at home. And they had a jukebox, and I took Miles up to the jukebox, and he got to play. He's never been in a bar where there's been a jukebox. So he was fascinated with this technology that you could, touch the screen and it could play, and I was showing him. And he played his Post Malone or whatever it was, top 40 hit. And there was one more credit, so I played Thunderstruck as a little wink to the Indians fans in the place. And nobody cared. Nobody got it. Nobody cared. Nobody knew that it was a Sox thing. I'm like, well, this rivalry isn't as hot right now as I thought it was. So.
I have to ask you, though. You say he's never been in a bar.
Well, this was a bar grill, so yeah.
Okay, because he's 10 years old.
Yeah, right.
I mean, how many bars has he been
in? I know. But this was a... It was a very bar grill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of bar and not a lot of grill. And it was a famous place. I think Johnny's, Little Johnny's Burgers in Cleveland. Anyway, the point being that he was like so in awe of being in a bar. And I'm like, it's not a bar. You can sit here.
Send him just, to Wisconsin. I mean, if you want to eat, you have to go to a bar.
That's right.
His first week of school in there. What'd you do this summer? I went to a bar and I played a jukebox.
All right. I played my favorite Post Malone.
My dad tried to make the fans mad by playing Thunderstruck.
Trolled the Indians fans and nobody cared. That's your top six.
That's it.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Nick DiGiulio, of course, here on WGN Radio. He airs every night, 1 to 5. Nick, good to talk to you, buddy.
Morning.
Morning. We're running a little late. Steve, I don't know if you heard, Steve's got caught in traffic on the Ike, which is always a pleasure. So we're kind of in for him. You did not see a movie with your parents because celebrating birthday last week, right?
Yeah, my dad's birthday. My dad turned 77.
Did you guys go to Gale Street?
We did.
Nice.
Did you get ribs?
I got, there was a special this past weekend where you get a half a slab of ribs and a bunch of smoked brisket. So I got a plate full of meat and I had a side of bacon, mac and cheese. So it was a really healthy meal.
Oh, geez.
I love it. And I love that the celebrating the birthday does not include a movie. Usually we go the other way. Like, let's go to a movie together.
But for
your family, that's a break from the monotony of movies.
I understand there was
It's also been like a really bad couple of weeks for movies. There really wasn't much out there to choose from last week. And I was off for Labor Day. And normally on Monday mornings, I review the new movie. So I really didn't have to see anything because I wasn't on the air to review them.
Right. Well, there you go. Well, let's why don't we talk about what's bugging you in pop culture? We'll start there. What do you got when it comes to your take on pop culture this week?
Well, I'm really getting sick of comic book movies and TV shows.
You're right.
I mean, there's a comic book movie released every other week. There are about 40 TV shows, you know, including Netflix and Hulu and all the other streaming services that are based on comic books. Now, they keep making money, so they're going to keep making them. Like, you know, movies like Black Panther and the last Avengers movie, Infinity War, made so much money that they're going to continue making them. We've got another Avengers movie coming out, you know, before the end of the year, or a Captain Marvel movie coming out before the end of the year, and then the next Avengers movie. But there's just so many of them, and a lot of filmmakers who really care about, you know, the art of filmmaking are actually saying that this is like the end of good movies, like they're ruining movies for everybody.
Now, Nick,
I don't necessarily.
Are you a comic book person?
No.
Okay, so
yeah,
I know. Like, our kids love those movies. Even Catherine, who's a 14-year-old girl, she thinks that they're the effects or something. You know, they really draw them in. They think that they're
You know, I mean, I didn't read comic books when I was a kid, and there are some comic book movies that I really love. Like, I liked Infinity Wars a lot, and I thought Black Panther was really great. It's just it's overwhelming how many there are.
I agree.
And for every really, really good comic book movie or really, really good comic book TV show, there are about five that suck. So...
That's so true. My friend was a comic book nerd when he was growing up, and he just always writes on social media and notes to his 13-year-old self saying, "Can you believe they've made movies of all the things that I read?" So there
everything.
Is something. There is some nostalgia to the idea that when we were growing up, they didn't do this, and now it seems.
No. I remember when the first Superman movie came out with Christopher Reeve. And it was a massive, it was a big hit, and it was really huge. Like, they had never, you know, they had never made a movie on that level. They had never made a comic book movie on that level. There were low-budget TV shows and low-budget movies, but, you know, that was a big-budget, big hit, came out at Christmas time. And I remember vividly seeing it in the theater and thinking it was really a lot of fun, but I didn't really know comic book. My favorite comic book movie is actually from a couple of years ago. And I think it's the best comic book movie ever made. And I love it because it's more like a Western, and that's Logan, the last Wolverine movie, Logan with Hugh Jackman. And that was unlike any comic book movie that's ever been made. It was rated R. It was really violent. It played more like a Western than a comic book movie. And it was really about the character and not so much about the effects and everything. And it's a terrific movie if people haven't seen it. Logan is the best.
Speaking of Westerns.
Back to the Future Part
3. Look at that segue. Look at that segue. Why, I happen to be showing Back to the Future Part 3 Tuesday night.
Tuesday night. It's upon at the Film Club screening of Back to the Future 3 on the 11th, September 11th, AMC Rosemont 18. This is of course, your Film Club. Highly popular, exciting, and it's been Back to the Future in Zemeckis all year. Back to the
all
Future.
Month. All summer. I'm sorry. All summer.
All summer. Back to the Future. Part 3 will be coming up on Tuesday, and you got to be there with Nick. Nick, thanks for joining us, bud.
Okay, man. Take care. I'm friends with the
monster. Oh, he's a monster. I'm sitting there tweeting. Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you. It's a guy, but I love you.
Chuck Todd joins us as America Comes Apart, starting at the White House. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Steve.
I think we're focused on the wrong thing here, and that is who wrote this op-ed, when the focus ought to be on the fact that the op-ed and the Woodward book show that the inmates are running the asylum. This is no way to run a country.
Well, look, I think that we would... Here's how I put it this morning to a colleague as we were putting together our first read newsletter this morning, which is simply... We're in a constitutional crisis, but nobody's told Congress yet. And I think that that's what it feels like. Or Congress hasn't acknowledged it yet.
Right.
At least this Congress hasn't. I mean, this is, you now have a somebody from inside. And look, I think a lot of things matter here. Who is this person? Not just who. How high up are they? And why now? These are two questions that I think are very important to this. I worry this has done more damage than negative and positive, if whatever they were trying to accomplish here. But I do think that, yes, I mean, if a functioning Congress at a minimum would say, what the hell is going on over there? Do we need to hold hearings on the competency of the President of the United States?
Yeah, and I think the answer is yes. And the question is, when is America going to wake up? What is it going to take? Do we have to have a wag the dog war be started where kids die? When are people going to wake up to this being a 911?
I think part of this is because it's so polarized, and you have a Republican Party that's basically sticking by this president through thick and thin. I mean, I'll be honest, I think it's doubly surreal that we have a Supreme Court confirmation hearing that is basically trying to make it look like Washington is acting normally, while literally there's a five-alarm fire down the street at Pennsylvania Avenue. But I think that the voters have to speak here, and I think the only way you're going to change the behavior of elected Republicans is if they lose power, and it's not the House. I think the future of the Trump presidency is on the ballot in the United States Senate. I think if Democrats win the Senate, that is when you will see elected Republican behavior on Capitol Hill change, because losing power will sober them up.
I'm going to be dramatic here. Okay, what happens between now and Election Day? Because if we have to, it sounds so ridiculous, but if we have to wait till Election Day for people to show up and care enough to vote and hope that they do, what happens in the next 8 weeks?
Well, look, I think this is... We've always said there's watch out for Donald Trump when he gets cornered. I mean, first of all, Donald Trump's a bit paranoid sometimes, but I would argue he has a right to be paranoid right now. Who could, if you're him, who do you trust?
Well, who does anybody? I mean, there's got to be factions. It's got to look like an episode of The Apprentice. There's got to be factions in the White House now that are looking at each other.
I think it looks like the scene in Anchorman where all the news channels are fighting each other.
Exactly. It's Newsman Rumble.
Yes, you're like, oh my God, Steve Bannon killed a man, you know?
That escalated quickly.
Right. Yes. I'm kidding for all of those. I don't think Steve Bannon knows how to throw a trident.
You have to laugh.
You got to, you know? Yeah, I think they were doing a comedy show when the Titanic was sinking, right? So, I think that we are, you know, I feel like the words uncharted and unprecedented obviously don't do this justice. But look, I think this op-ed is serving as an accelerant to our problem, and it may lead to more problems. It may, I don't know what a cornered, caged Donald Trump will do. None of us do.
There, Chuck, this is not a new story in the sense that there have been leaks and there have been published books and others about the dysfunction in the White House. For voters that aren't in Washington, D.C. or don't pay very close attention to insider politics, does this move the needle one way or the other? Or is this a continuing story that they feel is either fabricated or possibly overblown?
You know, it's interesting, Pat. And it's something I'm actually going to write about tomorrow morning and I'm sure you guys have been following it. There has been a noticeable trend over the last 10 days it's not a dramatic drop in the president's job approval, but it is an erosion. And you've seen it. And it began after the Manafort-Cohen stuff, but I don't think it was Manafort-Cohen. I think it was John McCain. Mm. Here's what I think if you're a House Republican and you're running for re-election, why you're having a panic attack. It's not a single individual story. It's the drama piling up. It's becoming the Washington drama. And it now looks like the president's at the center of the drama. And there's sort of an exhaustion to it. And I think the worst parts of the president's personality have been on display more in the last 2 weeks than we've seen in a while. His pettiness when it comes to McCain, his defensiveness when it comes to this investigation. It has been almost, we have had it on overload. And I'm wondering, you're asking me, has this moved the needle? Individually, no. I think it's accumulating. I think this accumulation of sort of drama and erratic behavior and sort of the worst parts of this, the most unlikable parts of it, like even his supporters will say, God, I wish he would have been nicer to McCain or whatever. I wonder if the entire accumulation is starting to serve as a burden that's just too hard to bear for some of these House.
Well, listen, I hope Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and frankly Chuck Schumer and everybody else that has abdicated, and Nancy Pelosi, everybody else that's abdicated their duty here to inform the public of how bad this is, I hope they all go down. I hope they'll all be remembered for the failures that they are. But at some point, grown-ups have to be grown-ups, and the rest of this country has to take their mind off of whatever is causing them to lose focus and pay attention.
But Steve, let me defend, let me defend Washington here a little bit. They've not experienced this before. I do think there's a lot of people who really truly believed one of two things about Donald Trump. Number one, he would change his behavior, or number two, he can't have the impact, he can't do, we can contain the damage. And at the end of the day, the voters spoke, let's contain the damage and move on. So I do think there people's hearts and minds have been in the right place. I think people are sounding the alarm in different ways. So I think everybody comes to this at their own pace. What I would say is this: if the house is on fire, and if somebody else wants to grab a hose, you should think, great, grab a hose. Let's hose it down. We'll worry about what took you so long after the fire's out.
You mentioned a motive behind the person that wrote this op-ed. I think it takes guts to write it. I also think it takes some lack of guts to identify yourself and resign and get out of there. Because if things are that bad that you're the only hope to protect this country, then why aren't you going to the vice president and to the Congress and to Chuck Todd and to major people in the media and to anybody? And to say, listen, you all have to know, and you all have to tell everybody else, this guy has got to go today.
Let me make a counterpoint of why doing it this way might have been better. You're paying more attention to the substance of the piece rather than the person who wrote it. If, let's say, it was some high-level person, then all the focus would be on what's their beef, what's their individual beef with the president. Instead, and look, I'm struggling with this too, right? I think the person put it back, but let me just take the other side of this, or what this person might be thinking is, guess what? I got the country talking about the substance of what I wrote rather than the drama behind who I am and why I decided to do it.
Listen, I get that, and I agree with it. But you talked earlier this week about it's time for the media to stop whining and
no, look,
and they got to fight back.
Yeah, I hear you. This person's not a member of the media, right? So, look, I think it'll be I will enjoy the journalism debating society later about whether the New York Times op-ed page is how they've handled this. I won't judge them until we know who the person is. Who wrote it? Then we'll know whether. Then I'll feel more comfortable assessing whether they've done the right thing on this or not. But I'll tell you this: I don't think this person's going to stay anonymous. I do worry about this person's safety when that person becomes public, and I think that's something we all want to think about.
You know, from what I know of major media companies, and I work for one and have for a long time, and what I know of lawyers and litigation and all the risk that's involved in covering the news, this has to be, if not a cabinet official, somebody extremely close to the president. This isn't some secondary or third-level person, or the New York Times doesn't print it.
It better not be. Or then it's a New York Times story. And then it's them stirring the pot.
Right.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. If it isn't.
But do you think there's a chance of that, based on where we are and based on everything that's been done, do you think there's a chance the editorial board of the New York Times would roll that dice?
I'm going to tell you what I know about James Bennett. James Bennett runs the editorial page editor. James Bennett's the brother of Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett is the United States Senator in Colorado, who I happen to believe, along with Ben Sasse, are like the two people that might have the most integrity. And there's a lot of people with integrity in the Senate, I'm saying, though. But Michael Bennett and Ben Sasse are the first two people I would think of to take care of my kids. I mean that. I think James Bennett, I've worked with him. He and I were editors together when we worked for a gentleman by the name of David Bradley. He was at The Atlantic. I was at The Hotline. He's edited me. He knows. I would like to believe he knows the consequences of his actions here, and he's savvy and sophisticated and is well aware of the damage this would do if it is some, like, you know, mid-level political bureaucrat at the NFC. So my confidence that it's high level is in James Bennett. So that's what I'm hanging my hat on.
It is never been a better day. There's never been a better day to watch, Chuck Todd and do Meet the Press and MTP Daily and the 1947 podcast. He has to change every 4 minutes now because of the development of the news. And I can't imagine what you're going to do this Sunday, but I know I'll be watching.
Sunday? I'm trying to figure out 5 o'clock today.
Exactly. thanks,
and then
man.
We got the NFL. All right.
The opening weekend in the NFL, and we can't even talk about the Packers and the Bears.
I know. And I've got I do a guest gambling site on a radio show, and I'm like,
are you talking about with Kornheiser?
My head's not in the game right now.
Right.
I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah, tell Tony.
Crisis. I don't know if the 49ers are going to cover against the Vikings.
Exactly. Tell Tony you got bigger problems. Thank you, Jeff.
All right, guys. See you.
There you go. It's Chuck Todd from Meet the Press.
So interesting.
I mean, you know, we're getting to a point where we're just all going to walk around like
It is so true. If it is not somebody with name recognition or integrity who wrote this, if it is a low-level someone who was brought in from the Obama administration who is now there, that's going to be a big, big loss for the New York Times. If it is, you're absolutely right that you can't see them take.
I can't
that
imagine
dice,
on any level that that's what's going on.
Because this is a big one.
Here's who we know that we or we should know. It's not Rod Blagojevich. Sure, he was on The Apprentice, but last we knew, he was still in prison, and the New York Times wouldn't run his written work. So let's eliminate Blago, and then we can keep looking. I have a $50 gift card to Bartolini's Restaurant Catering and Banquets. When are they bringing food in? Tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow at 9:10.
Are they bringing in a 10-pound meatball sandwich?
I hope so. I might. I want to eat it for my Always Hungry videos.
I don't think you could handle a 10-pound meatball sandwich.
I mean,
you're strong. You're strong, certainly. You've got Olympic-level talents in this area, but I don't see that happening.
Did I can eat more than meatball? You think. And this, the meatball challenge they have on their website, I think that they give you 3 hours to a single person to eat the 10 pounds of meatballs.
Wow.
And there's a pound of cheese on it, a pound of red gravy.
So it's like when you go to the ice cream place and they're like, we've got the biggest ice cream ever. And if you eat it, you get a t-shirt.
Right. Or somebody can double up with me. Two of us can eat it in like an hour and a half or something.
That's legal?
Yeah. They have a few different options. So
Steve, you in?
No.
You in? You want to do five pounds?
It's 5 pounds.
No.
That's a regular breakfast. What are you talking about? 5 pounds.
Three? A regular breakfast for who?
5 pounds of meat, right?
Yeah, five pounds of meat. That sounds it. Maybe Grisanich will do it with me.
I don't know. That even seems like it's above my pay grade as well.
They're not shipping to all 50 states. Use the code Bartolini10. You get $10 off your first shipping order at Bartolini's.com. Family owned and operated in Midlothian, home of Chicago's best meatballs. And the Bartolini 10-pound meatball sandwich challenge. I love a good meatball sandwich.
I'm in.
But I like one that's maybe, I don't know, 8 ounces on the high end.
I think you can go up to 4 people can do the challenge.
You're selling
yourself short. Four people do it, we have to eat it in 15 minutes, I believe.
Oof.
So what is 10 divided by 4?
Why would you eat meatballs with 3 other people?
Well, I mean, for the challenge, I'll do it for the show.
Can a human even eat 10 pounds of meat?
Not live.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I would have nightmares for a year. Meat gives me nightmares.
Oh, that's right. It does get out.
Meat gives me nightmares.
Wait, what?
Red meat, yeah. I have nightmares.
Wow.
What?
Like a hamburger or something.
That's awesome.
So meatballs would, oh boy.
We should do a segment where we feed Mary a hamburger at 10 o'clock at night and then see what happens.
Don't.
And then she has to tell us about her dreams when the show starts.
I'd probably be murdering you guys in my sleep.
Yeah, we don't need that. Slasher nightmares involving meat and meat hooks?
If we...
Like a wolf in the woods? Is that
here's the deal. If we can get the person who wrote the New York Times op-ed to call, they win automatically.
Okay. All right.
And if it's not, then we'll go a seventh caller.
Right.
What about Gary Busey? I think Gary Busey wrote it.
And Dennis Rodman. Cindy Lauper.
If Dennis Rodman, Cindy Lauper, and Gary Busey wrote it, they probably had some help. You know what I'm saying?
The estate of Joan Rivers.
Coming up, Stories That Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
And it's come to make another tough choice. As much as I love this job and will always love this city and its residents, I've decided not to seek the election.
Mayor Emanuel spent about 45 minutes here yesterday morning in his first and I think only broadcast interview so far, certainly his first. And we'll get to that in a second. But first, as Rick Pearson joins us, finest political writer in America from your Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, and host of the Sunday Spin, I ask you first, Rick, what is a plug for your own Sunday show? What are you doing this weekend, or do you have no idea because of the fast-changing news?
Well, I think we have to talk a little bit about ROM. So I have political strategist Michael Golden, who's worked for ROM, worked against ROM. He'll be on, as well as my Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart, who has been all over this story. And we also have, for state politics, we'll be talking to Republican Senate Minority Leader Bill Brady.
We have to start with the op-ed. And in an effort to try to get all of us to understand how a major metropolitan newspaper works, or a world-renowned newspaper like the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Chicago Tribune, what is the difference between the newsroom and the editorial room and the op-ed page?
The editorial room, the editorial board, the source of editorials, and the op-eds are completely separate from the reporting staff in the newsroom, which presents this great conundrum for the New York Times, is that the New York Times reporters now, in a way, are looking at an investigation involving their colleagues across the wall in the editorial board room, because it's the editorial board that knows who this senior administration official is, decided that they were of such stature that they were worthy of being granted anonymity. And you kind of have an interesting newsroom battle going on over at the New York Times.
How do you feel about the fact that they printed an anonymous editorial?
You know, I'm really torn by it. Is one, if the stakes are so high, part of me says, well, then it should have a name attached to it. And I understand, obviously, the reason that anonymity was granted was because this person will be out of a job, and we'll learn who the person is. There's no doubt about it. That's the way government works. And given some of the passages that the anonymous source cited, we'll know from people he talked to who he is. But having said that, there's also the duty to journalistic duty to bring you the news and bring you the immediacy of the news. And when you take this anonymous op-ed and you combine it with Bob Woodward's book, It's really a damning condemnation of a White House that's chaotic, that's under siege, that is trying to function government through basically a bureaucracy because, in their words, the president can't be trusted.
Do you, does the conflict within you and within your career and your knowledge of this, do you come down on the side of it's too important for the public not to know to, you know, set this new precedent?
I'm probably 60-40 on that way, is that this is too important to know. But that having been said, you know, it also, you can call into question this person that's this anonymous source. I'm the adult, you know, I'm one of the few adults in the room. Trust us, we know better. Mm-hmm. We don't know who you are. We don't know, you know, why did you take this job? Why are you still working for a man of that's so unstable? The argument there, you know, he says he's doing it for country. It's our country, and I'd sure like to know.
The duty for country ultimately would be to remove the man from office. This doesn't do that.
No, it doesn't. I mean, obviously, the portion of this that talked about the cabinet early on, talking about invoking the 25th Amendment to remove him, I mean, that's just breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking that that kind of conversation would exist inside the walls of the White House. And I mean, this is the kind of thing too, where if we knew who it was, you know, there could be hearings, there could be congressional hearings. We would actually know. And truly, you know, this question of who the senior administration official is, you know, how senior are they? And as I said, you know, this is a risk for the New York Times, because if it's some minor official at some agency, that's one thing. If this is somebody that's in the cabinet room, if this is a cabinet official, I mean, we had the vice president's office this morning taking the unusual step of denying that Mike Pence is the source of this and that the vice president signs his op-eds. It's crazy.
Exactly. I just want people to wake up and understand how big a deal this is.
It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. And truly, if regardless of where you fall on this, everybody should read this.
Yeah, and both parties are absolutely at fault in getting us to this point.
Yes,
all right, let's talk about the mayor in a second.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Could you work the word naughty into the next time you read that a couple more times?
Naughty? Naughtiness?
Naughty and naughtiness. We're back with Rick Pearson for a couple more minutes. Rick, I don't know if you heard the mayor when he was on yesterday.
I did.
But one of the things that I thought he said were very interesting, he said the person's going to be the next mayor of Chicago is not in the race yet. Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, you know, I think that's probably one of the most interesting things that he said. And you know, certainly with him stepping out of the race, that opens up the field. But you have a lot of people right now, I'd say everybody's trying to get a little bit of 15 minutes here. I'm not sure in the end how many of the variety of names that we're hearing will ultimately end up making a run. You know, you look at Tony Preckwinkle, for example. I don't know that, you know, after what she's done extensively about county finances, about wanting to step into the morass that is Chicago finances. Susana Mendoza is interesting given the fact that, you know, even though she's running for reelection as controller in November, there is no real high profile as of yet Latino candidate in this race. You know, there's Louis Gutierrez says he's looking at it. I'm not sure that it will actually come to pass, but I do think there will be some more names that get in. One of the things I think that what we're seeing is a kind of a struggle, and I wrote about this yesterday, about you've got a Democratic Party that is also trying to settle fights within itself between establishment and the more progressive wing. And typically what we've seen in recent elections is kind of the progressive wing advancing, and that's particularly true in urban Democratic areas. And Chicago's had, for the most part, and through Rahm, a kind of an establishment centrist kind of history, Harold Washington obviously being a notable exception, but, you know, is the party going to change? Is the Democratic base so different now that this will be a more progressive candidate? And how does that really affect kind of the establishment of the city as in regards to the financial markets, the business markets, and those kinds of things?
Yeah, such an interesting time. We saw this, 8 years ago when Mayor Daley said he wasn't running for re-election. Is it similar to you as someone has been a political observer for as many years as you had? Is this the same kind of thing that someone like Rahm Emanuel will pop in and sort of take over, or will this be the wild, wild west of Chicago politics?
Well, I'm not sure that there's that Rahm Emanuel that exists out there right now. I really don't know. I mean, you know, people say who's the front runner. I don't think you can say there's any kind of front runner. It's way too early. I think, without the absence of someone of that of kind of a statural nature, both politically and governmentally, I think it is the wild, wild west. And now you have candidates, you know, even in this current announced field, you have candidates whose basic plan for running was to run to finish in a runoff with Rahm, so it was to attack Rahm. Well, merely attacking Rahm's not good enough, and now they're going to have to try to differentiate themselves from each other. And that's a much more complicated task, particularly when the name recognition isn't real high for a lot of these people.
Before we let you go, mention again what you got for Sunday.
We're going to be talking Rahm with my Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart, political strategist Michael Golden. We'll also be talking state Republican politics with Illinois Senate Republican leader Bill Brady.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Rick Pearson. Our most valuable person on the planet is interesting this morning. Now, if you're a hot girl at any sporting event in America now, you're going to end up on the Internet. This happened to Alexa Greenfield. Alexa Greenfield is the most valuable person on the planet. She's minding her own business. She's not hurting anybody. She's a little hungover. She's at the game with her nephews. And she says, listen, I'm about to show you something here, and I don't want you to tell anybody about this because you're going to think I'm a little goofy. And she dipped chicken fingers into soda to eat them. Has anyone tried this?
Never tried that.
Chicken fingers in soda.
I have not tried this, but I do like them in honey, so I feel like soda is just a more liquid version of honey.
Well, it turns out Alexa is a genius scientist on the verge of winning a Nobel Prize. Good morning, Alexa.
Hi.
You're a genius.
I don't know if I've heard that too many times before about this situation.
All right. So you tell, were these two of your nephews? How many kids did you have with you?
I was with three of my nephews.
All right. So in what game were you at?
At the U.S. Open.
I was at the U.S. Open,
oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought it was baseball. All right. So you're at the U.S. Open, and you admitted you were a little hungover.
Just a little.
How are you feeling this morning, by the way?
Oh, I feel great. I mean, it's been really, really crazy the past few days, but I just can't stop laughing. I find it to be the funniest thing that's possibly ever happened.
Well, there's really nothing else going on. You know what I mean, Alexa? It's like everything else is fairly stable. So, of course, we want to know your secret. The idea of taking something salty and putting in something sweet is one of the great combination ideas, period. So not only are you not nuts, you've stumbled on something here, which maybe we all should try.
Yes, I do want everyone to try it. I actually just started a hashtag Alexa G Dip Challenge where I'm asking people to try the chicken finger in the soda or try the chicken finger in something else weird or try something else weird in the soda because I've been getting all these messages. I put my pizza in soda. I put my burger in soda. I'm like, okay, post a video of you doing that, and then I'm going to donate per video to cyberbullying because...
Oh, that's nice.
Although I think it's funny, I'm taking this lightly, I can make fun of myself, I do think it's disgusting as well, even though I like it.
Right.
But it doesn't, when things go viral, it doesn't always wind up as lighthearted,
right.
So I definitely want to turn all this absurdity into a good cause.
I mean, there's some people on the internet that were saying that Alexa should go to jail and things because this is such, outlandish
Someone
behavior.
Said she probably owns an AK-47.
Yeah.
You know the internet's nuts, Alexa, you know that.
I do. That's why I want to try to turn it around into something good.
I think that's a very nice thing. What do you do when you're not dipping?
I own a chocolate company in New York City.
Oh, so you got a sweet tooth as well.
I've always been very weird about food.
What's the name of your chocolate company?
It's called Greenfield Goodies. It's for kids. There's a toy and chocolate.
Oh, that's cool. Where is it?
It's all over Party City, Dillon's Candy Store. I have a distributor.
Well, we got a Dillon's right on Michigan Avenue here, and also at O'Hare.
It actually might be there.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your success, and thank you for revealing this very weird thing that you do and turning America on to hashtag what again?
Alexa G. Dip Challenge.
Alexa G. Dip Challenge.
I want
to
know.
You guys should all do it. Record yourself. Post
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
It's for a good cause.
Okay, yeah, it really
we can
is.
Try that. Did Jason Alexander reach out? Because, you know, there's a Seinfeld episode where he's eating ice cream at the U.S. Open. And so you were also in the same position with the chicken fingers.
Yeah, except somebody wrote that for a sitcom. This actually happened to me.
Right. You're actually doing it. It's not TV. It's real.
This is real.
All right. Well, thank you for doing this with us, because you are the most valuable person on the planet. Pete and Super Joe, find something nice to send to Alexa that she can enjoy. Something salty and something sweet.
There you go.
All right, Alexa. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. There's your palate cleanser.
I'll try that. I mean, there's a lot of glazed Coca-Cola glazed food.
Yeah, I'm a big
right?
Coke fan. Yeah, that's
it
not.
It doesn't seem that abnormal to me.
No, maybe well, if you left it in there and it soaked it up.
We have the Mexican takeaway joint downstairs.
El Jardin?
Yeah, and we can get soda. So before 10 o'clock, I mean, I'm eating apples before 10 o'clock. One of you knuckleheads.
Well, to find a chicken finger, though.
Dip it. No, I'm saying you can get something. You can do it with anything. Get something salty from the Mexican place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A really big man with ethics, even though he has no height. Listen to Pat Brady.
Listen to Pat Brady.
He's really gonna blow your mind, because he's seldom wrong, just right. Yeah. Listen to Pat Brady.
My friend Pat Brady, I was playing golf with him, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And he was sitting in his car kind of bobbing his head up and down. I went over and he was just listening to his theme song over and over again. It was kind of embarrassing. Hi, buddy.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Let's talk about the mayor's appearance yesterday. I don't know if you had a chance to hear the interview yet, because I know you're busy in the morning. But what are your thoughts on saying that the next mayor of Chicago is not in the race yet?
I kind of agree. I think there are a couple people out there that might get in. I still think my good friend Tom Dart, if he got in, would win, but he has no interest.
Yeah, I haven't heard Tom, yeah.
Right.
No interest.
What about Bridget Gaynor? She said no. Would she get back in now?
I don't know. You know, her reasons that she gave here that when she said she wasn't going to run were solid reasons,
sure.
Family reasons. So I take her at her word. As Tom Dart said, he goes, I love my kids, and that job's 24/7. I don't want to do it.
It's a job, Pat, that so many people were throwing around names, this, that, and the other. But there is the reality that coming up in 2020, there's a fiscal cliff. Who would want this job?
Well, you have to take on a gang problem that cannot be solved within the time you would be in office in its entirety. And you also have to take on the money issue.
And constant criticism. I mean, it's not.
Every day.
Let me ask you this. In general, is it a political plum job? Is it the best job in the Midwest to have, the mayor of Chicago?
I think it'd be the coolest job outside of being president.
I think being mayor of Chicago, it's the most consequential mayor's office.
I think most people aspire to be an executive rather than a legislator. They all want to be an executive because that's, I think, just much more rewarding.
Is it? And the mayor yesterday talked about that the future of government or leadership is municipal. He talked about it being local. Do you see it that way? Do you see that more people wanting these kind of big city jobs as opposed to?
That's interesting from a big government Democrat that now it's local. I'm glad he's adopted the Reagan theory of government.
But he's come around on that.
Yeah, but give him some credit for all the criticisms people have. He made some tough calls on some of the fiscal issues, and he had it. Some other things that didn't go so well, but he did make some really tough calls.
And he did do great things with pre-K and all day K, and you know, he made a lot of inroads, and we got a lot of cranes in this city that we didn't have before.
Walk tip to tip in the city. I don't think there's a finer city in the world.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, let's go to Springfield. What is the state of the governor's race?
I think it's tighter than the Democrats think. You saw today, I think the big development is the First Lady, Diana Rauner, is doing TV ads.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now, and if you remember 4 years ago, Steve, her first appearance on behalf of the governor was on your show. And I still think, and I told her that tipped the race to him because she validated him to suburban women, which he needed, which he did very well with.
Does that work
She came
again?
On three times before election day.
I do think it works again. And I think it works because she's so effective. She's one of the most impressive women I've ever seen when she gives a political speech or even in person. But again, I'll go back to this every time. J.B. Pritzker's whole campaign is, I'm going to increase your taxes. That's his only message. I'm going to increase your taxes. Guaranteed, if you vote for J.B. Pritzker, you're going to be paying more in taxes. And another issue came up this week about he wants to raise a proposal out there to do a mileage tax. A penny and a half per
mile. Regardless of Pritzker, when Rauner needed Dinah to come on and vouch for him, essentially, and for people to go, this is a good candidate, we didn't have any track record on him. We now have a whole 4 years. Are voters going to be swayed by character pitches? Or will what happened in office?
It certainly makes it more difficult because there is a track record. But when you put her out there to vouch for him again on what he's trying to get it done, and he said 4 years ago it was an 8-year plan, and then you got, and I don't think you can take it in a vacuum and not consider that the other guy always talking about is raising your taxes. Who knows? But she was very effective last time.
Why can't he? And I think he's getting terrible advice. But why can't he stand up and say, "I was wrong about a lot of things in my first 4 years. I was wrong to think that I could take on Mike Madigan and win in that short a period of time." The deal is, from the governor's office, I have the power of the governor, but to pass a bill in the state to get anything done, we need the approval of the House and the Senate. And Mr. Madigan reproves nothing that comes out of this office. And he's got the paperwork and the track record and the timeline to prove it. But he's got to own the fact that it's not fixed yet, regardless of whether it's his fault or not.
I think he does. And I think 80% or 70% of what a governor does, nobody hears about. And I think that this state functions a lot better. He's completely retrofitted the technology system in this state. And this state runs a heck of a... I deal with these agencies all the time. This state runs a lot better under Bruce Rauner than it did under Pat Quinn. So I think he needs to emphasize things that he has done, mm-hmm. been successful. And I think you're starting to see that roll out, and I think Diana Rauner might be the messenger for a lot of that.
You know, Steve, you said he should own that about the Madigan thing, but it's not going to change. So if you own that right now and say, hey, I haven't been able to do this, and I'm not going to be able to because Mike Madigan's not going to be different.
No, he doesn't say I'm not going to be able to, but he could say, I don't know if it's fixable in the next 4 years, but we need everyone to stand up and say enough is enough. It's not that hard a speech to write.
No, but I think it is fixable, and I think if Governor Rauner wins a second term, that's the beginning of the end of the Madigan regime, because the governor's going to be in a lot stronger position. I think people within the Democratic caucus, there's a lot of great people in that caucus, are going to be seeing the future. And the big thing is, if Governor Rauner wins, you won't let Mike Madigan draw the map, which is the biggest thing probably politically. So
eventually there'll be a Supreme Court decision on the maps anyway in the state, like there was in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, but it's down the road.
Yeah, they passed on the first one, the Wisconsin one, so the Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, I mean, so, and that will have a significant impact. But right now, we're stuck with what we're stuck with.
This op-ed is huge. I want to talk to you about that. The Woodward book, I want to talk to you about that. But I also want you to tell people, you described this off the air to me, it's the coolest moment you've ever had. And you've had some cool moments in your life. And it was last Saturday at the McCain funeral. Is that the right word? Memorial?
Yeah, memorial service
in Washington. In the White House, and I mean like more chaos than normal. If you're waking up this morning and you're wondering why things or how things could be worse than they've already been,
anonymously alleged chaos.
Bob, well, no, will you check Trump's Twitter feed while we talk about last Saturday?
I would love to. Let me do that right now.
I've got a pair of tickets to Andre Rieu in his 60-piece Johann Strauss Orchestra at Allstate Arena. Was that what we were listening to? Was that Andre? It actually fits for, like, the new White House theme, you know? Sounded ominous. The European King of Waltz is back with a repertoire ranging from emotional ballads to celebrated waltzes. You can book your tickets at Andre Rieu, RIEU.com. That may be the worst idea for a ticket hook website ever. Let me spell that out again. Andre Rieu, RIEU.com, or at Ticketmaster. But I suppose if you're a big Andre fan, you'd know him. So get your tickets, or you can win them now. The first person that calls and says, I wished I would have never quit the oboe, you'll be a big winner at 312-981-7200. Because I regret quitting playing saxophone.
And if you recall, last time we gave away these tickets, we had texters and callers saying that you were pronouncing it incorrectly. But then we went to the thing, the pronunciation, and it gave us three different versions of it. So
it was Rayu, Ryu, and Smith.
Yeah. So.
It was those three. Pat, tell me about last Saturday. Pat Brady.
Last Saturday, I attended the memorial service for Senator John McCain in the National Cathedral. And the point that you were talking about before, at one point, everybody in the Coliseum or the cathedral, there are roughly 2,000 people in there. You had Congressional Medal of Honor winners. You had former presidents. You had
major celebrities,
everybody, and McCainiacs like me. At one point during the ceremony, everybody to the Navy band stood up and sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Oh, wow.
And then shortly after that, Renee Fleming sang Danny Boy.
Yeah.
And anybody that's Irish, that's, you know, I was there with my
son. You don't have to be Irish to cry to that.
But I tried to turn away. Everybody's bawling. I mean, it's all these white-haired guys with big eyebrows bawling.
I would love Renee Fleming. That's amazing.
She's unbelievable.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Did you know her? Did you ever on?
Yeah, she was in studio with us. And I think I told you this. She was very funny and off the air. She said, Steve, we're not all fat and boring. So she's great. She's tremendous. But this service itself is tremendous. And you know that moment of Battle Hymn of the Republic, what did you think of? Because I thought of when all of Congress stood on the steps of the Capitol and sang after 9/11 in the only show of true unity we've had since.
It certainly was, and you saw from the eulogies from Meghan McCain all the way through, there was a theme that what John McCain represented is not where the direction the country's going right now. I think a lot of people, both Democrats and Republicans, you know, we spent the evening, Leader Durkin and I went out there, Jim Durkin, with the night before with Senator Durbin, who could not have been more gracious, took care of Jim Durkin and me, and we talked about the direction of the country and the discourse is not what he wants or anybody else wants, and certainly not what Senator McCain wants. So I think there was a unifying moment there, particularly at the Battle Hymn of the Republic. I mean, you can't stand there if you love the country and not get kind of choked up when you're in there singing that.
Right, and that's why we wake up this morning to an editorial from someone on the inside, printed by the New York Times, someone who says they're part of the resistance, and they are identified by the New York Times as a Trump administration, a major official in the Trump administration, could be a cabinet member. And in it talks about all the things, really echoes all the things that the Bob Woodward book broke earlier this week. And to give credit where credit's due, where Omarosa said in her book and what Michael Wolff said in his.
Michael Wolff, right.
And that's that Donald Trump has no control of the White House. He's a mess. The people around him don't know what he's going to do next. They're stealing papers off his desk so he won't sign us up for war. And it goes on and on every day. They wake up every day to try to save America. That's the point of the op-ed.
Can I go to the Trump tweet desk?
Yeah, what do you got?
Kim Jong-un of North Korea proclaims, quote, unwavering faith in President Trump. Thank you to Chairman Kim. We will get it done together. That's the one.
Well, I know somebody that's just been buried spinning in his grave right now.
Yeah. That's then we've got the deep state and the left and their vehicle, the fake news media, are going crazy, capital crazy, and they don't know.
Did he spell crazy with a K?
No, but it's a strange. The grammar's a little. He's using.
That's how you know it's from him.
Anyway, the economy is booming like never before. Jobs are at historic highs. Soon, two Supreme Court justices and maybe declassification to find additional corruption. Wow.
I know who wrote that. Not bad.
Well, he like whoever. Oh, really?
Yeah. Lodestar's a meteorological. That was Tom Skilling.
Skilling? Yeah. I did not see that coming. Well, Skilling could save America. Yeah.
Well, Lodestar's, I think that's a weather term.
The rough draft of that op-ed had an extra 15 pages on Jetstream, and they're like, this doesn't have anything to do with what we're.
Hey, but because you didn't ask, I'm going to tell you. Don't do it anonymously. If you're a patriot and you believe this, stand up and go to Congress. I don't like the anonymous nature of this. If you really believe
I said that to Chuck Todd, yeah.
Yeah, get out and say this. That this is not heroic to do something anonymously.
And there's something to be said. I mean, I know the president likes to kind of pin it on the left, capital L, the left.
Well, it's the New York Times.
Yeah, but the left isn't. They don't want it anonymous. But you want to get
listen. Let me give you a perspective of maybe people in my party that think that the New York Times is the enemy, and they buy off it. You were making the point earlier. Yeah. How much does it move the needle? I don't disagree with the seriousness of it.
Just don't put that in a box that therefore it's fake news.
No, but my point is the left doesn't want an anonymous op-ed. They want this person to come out. I've already seen people today say, "So you're complicit in this? Whoever this ranking official is, that you're just going to let this happen and be the firewall for us? Or how about be a patriot and step forward and stop this from happening? I mean, I don't know if this is necessarily a mouthpiece for the left.
This is the same thing that's going on in Congress. You got the Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer types who are more concerned about saving their jobs than saving this country. If this person who wrote this op-ed is truly concerned that the country is in grave danger because of the guy in the White House, the idea is not to manage him. The idea is to remove him.
There's a process, and this is my argument on doing. There's a process for removal. You're working for the elected president. You are not elected. If you truly believe this, you have an obligation to go to Congress and go through the process, not put some anonymous editorial.
I totally agree. And by the way, I also agree with Chuck when Chuck said this person could be in danger. And because there's enough knuckleheads out there who could endanger the person. But that's not why they say they're not coming forward. Right. They say they're not coming forward because we need them to protect us from the guy in charge.
They're making too many decisions on their own. That's not their decision. There is a process. Follow the rules.
But, you know, I've talked about this since the day he was elected. We trace the call. It's coming from inside the House. But it's not coming from this guy. We trace the call. It's coming from inside the House. It's Trump calling Gary Busey. He's the guy in charge. We can't have the country in desperate need to be protected from the guy in charge. I don't know how else to explain that.
Well, he also put, you know, the tweet last night that President Trump had was, I said I was going to drain the swamp, and this is part of draining the swamp.
He can't make the argument, but
you can make the argument that he has an administration or people that are lifers in that building that might quite possibly be part of the swamp he's trying to drain.
Hey, just for the record, for 2 years I said he would never win. Right? Right, Steve?
Yeah, I was here.
We are here.
I was on board with you. By the way, I remember the day that I said to you, okay, now it's down to two. This is dangerous. And you said, he's not going to win. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I think he called me an idiot. And by the way, I am at times, but I wasn't that day.
I think when we were watching...
I rest my case.
We were watching the election results, and my husband Pat said, I thought that Steve said he wasn't going to win as we're watching the numbers come in.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Did you hear the story on the exit polls?
Paul
Ryan was in town a couple of months ago, and he said they were getting exit polls with Ryan's over at the
RNC. Paul Ryan was speaking?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He did a very nice job, by the way. Anyway, he said that night, the exit polls, he was over at the RNC with Reince Priebus, and they thought they were going to lose by 15. And he thought he was going to be the last man standing. So people lied to the exit pollsters.
Yeah.
Wow.
They voted for Trump, came out and said they didn't.
Wow.
Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, coming up on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
Dean Richards, part of Moron Entertainment, sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. By the way, you know, Dean, I've said before, soon to be award-winning Moron Entertainment.
Yes.
Apparently, we're getting a participation ribbon from Larry Wirt, the guy in charge of Tribune Media.
Oh, that's nice, just for showing up every day.
Yeah, it's a start.
Yeah, that's okay.
I mean, it's not huge, but it's not bad.
I don't mind that at all.
What style is the ribbon? Is it blousey?
He said he wanted to surprise me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a straight ribbon.
I said, is there a color associated with this segment on the show? And he said, what color is sad? Hi, Dean. How are you?
I think this segment puts a smile on people's faces.
I think so, too.
I agree.
I would like a ribbon, but with a little smiley face button attached to it.
There you go.
Like a little smiley face button and you know, like a little ribbon underneath it.
Hey, quick survey. If a grown man says the word naughty, is it funny or not? I find it funny.
I find it very funny.
All right, Dave, there's your explanation. Dave wanted to know why I found naughty funny when he said it twice this morning in a commercial. It's funny because it's funny.
Yeah, I like the word naughty.
It was in the commercial for the for Avenue Q at the Mercury Theater.
That's right. Naughty.
And see, it's funny when Dean says it, too.
There are a lot of words we say in our commercials that is not necessarily something that I say in everyday life.
We were hoping that naughty would make its way into sportscast.
Okay, well, I'll work on that.
It's similar to when he does the hoodie-footy pajama reads.
Can you try to work the
holidays coming up?
Naughty into Northwestern play-by-play.
That would be great.
Oh, well, right after a penalty. Right yeah, after right. a penalty. Naughty. That boy was naughty.
This is getting back to naughty. The phrase that pays.
Oh, remember that? Oh, let me write that down. We haven't done that in a long time.
Oh, good.
Yeah. You know, Dave has Northwestern football. The Bears are playing this weekend. And baseball, you always hear the guy's stuff is nasty. Why can't you say something like, that guy's stuff is naughty?
That was a naughty sack.
Or when the official throws the yellow handkerchief.
Oh, he's been right. naughty.
He did something naughty. Or hey, Teddy did something naughty down there.
If you really want to embellish, you can go, naughty, naughty, naughty.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So I look up on my... Listen, I'm just doing a show. I'm not hurting anybody. I look up, and there you are with Gary Sinise this morning. That? What was that about?
How about that? You know what? This Gary Sinise cannot be a nicer guy.
He is a good dude.
Number one, he's just a really good dude. Really, really, really nice guy. But, you know, he has... He has pretty much put his career secondary in his life to the work that he's doing for veterans.
Yep.
Most celebrities, you know, when they have a little spare time, they help out different charities. They're very, you know, say what you want about celebrities. They are extremely benevolent. They help out and donate lots to charity. Gary has pretty much made this his full-time job right now. His TV show, Criminal Minds, went off the air a couple of 2-3 years ago, something like that. CSI has been off for a long time. Of course, we know him from Forrest Gump as Lieutenant Dan, and he founded Steppenwolf Theater Company, co-founded it with John Malkovich and a bunch of other super famous
actors. So, in other words, he's done nothing.
He has done nothing in his life. He could easily just go from fancy Hollywood project to fancy Hollywood project. Instead, he's constantly working with his foundation to help veterans, to help first responders, to help their families along the way. And yesterday was no exception. Caught up with him at O'Hare Airport yesterday, where he was taking a group of World War II veterans and students from his alma mater, Highland Park High School, to the World War II Museum in New Orleans. The purpose of that is to have the veterans tell stories to the students to kind of, you know, impart the wisdom and the bravery of the greatest generation. You want to not get your eyes all teared up watching World War II veterans coming down that long corridor, the American Airlines terminal, with all the American flags up in the, you know, the skyline, skylights along the way. They had the Navy Great Lakes band playing music, and these veterans, most of whom were in their 90s.
Was this an honor flight?
It wasn't an honor flight, technically. This was called Valor Soars.
Okay, because that's the honor flight does the same thing, but they usually come back to Midway. But I totally have seen that, and it's incredibly moving.
Yeah, it's almost exactly the same as honor flights. But, you know, Gary is doing this, along with American Airlines and many of their other partners with the foundation. It was tremendously moving. We talked with Gary after they started loading up the vets on the airplane, and he talked a little about his passion with this.
I was blessed to have 9 years on CSI New York and another 2 years on Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. That, you know, that was a very positive. It gave me a lot of security. I could do a lot of good things with the benefits of being on television for that amount of time. And one of those is starting a foundation and doing some good with that.
Seeing all these Highland Park high school students here, does it take you back to the day when you were first starting out and getting your feet wet with some acting?
I went back to Highland Park High School yesterday and kind of toured around, and I went to the places where I first started acting and where my teacher invited me to come and audition for a play, and I was standing right in the spot where it all began for me, and it was very, very personal. Yeah. It was good to go back.
Were you a pretty good student back then?
I was
hoping you were a troublemaker.
Terrible student.
Oh, that's the kind of story we love to hear.
That is encouraging for the rest of us, isn't it?
Well, you can always be a success if you're flunking out of school.
Yeah.
Don't let yourself
down.
He
was a troublemaker and a bad student.
Yeah,
I felt
sure.
A new bond to him.
That's how you get into show business. Sacha Baron Cohen, Vanity Fair, McCartney, and Jeff Goldblum all still to come on More on Entertainment.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9.
Well, the weeks fly by. Soon it'll be another Sunday, and Dean will be on the radio, I think. You on Sunday?
Not this Sunday, I won't be.
Ah, so close.
You're going to be in Toronto, right?
I'll be at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Awesome. Can we come too?
Sure. Come on along there. Yeah, we love going up there to Canada.
I love Toronto.
Me too.
It's a great city.
It's a beautiful city. This film festival is one of the world's best, where they begin to roll out the big Christmas movies. For the year, you know, the Academy Award nominees, and I'll be seeing tons of movies. I've already seen A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Bradley Cooper also directs it. It is phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Those two on the red carpet these last few days, they look like they have the best chemistry.
Yeah.
I keep thinking they're a couple. Are they a couple?
I don't think they are, no.
Dean, I just saw a terrifying report yesterday, since you're going to the airport, that the trays that you put your keys and laptop and things in are
loaded with bacteria.
Yeah, the dirtiest thing at the airport.
That's why
makes total sense.
When you see Uncle Dean on a plane, I get out the like the Clorox wipes. I have like a little thing in my backpack, and I wiped my area like a crazy person.
Listen, what happens to me? As soon as my laptop clears security, I throw it out. I just take it and throw it away.
Can't be too careful.
No, you got to be careful.
The cooties are everywhere.
Sacha Baron Cohen's in the news.
Is being sued by a former Alabama Senate candidate.
And racist.
Well,
and pedophile.
Well, allegedly, all those things. Roy Moore. Mm-hmm. Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, he does his, he's got this new TV show, Who is America?
Mm-hmm.
And he interviews people and sets them up for... I think really showing who these people really are. In this case, with Roy Moore, Sacha Baron Cohen's in disguise. He interviews Roy Moore and says that he has got a wand that detects pedophiles. And every time he takes the wand and puts it near Roy Moore, the wand starts beeping. So Moore now is suing Sacha Baron Cohen for defamation of character.
Did he walk off the interview?
I believe he did continue with the interview. I saw a little clip of it, and he just, you know, these guys, first of all, how do you not know who Sacha Baron Cohen is?
Yeah, I've seen the disguises. It's sort of like when Superman would wear glasses.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on, he looks like him.
Yeah, it's like if Steve put on a, you know, a rubber mustache.
Well, more importantly, a hairpiece.
Something tells me Roy Moore is not watching Ali G episodes from HBO.
That might be, but, you know, his people don't everywhere. Know. They don't know.
I don't even know if he has people now that he's, you know, had a rough few months.
Possibly. Anyways, Showtime.
Is this going to hurt his mall time?
So Showtime and Sasha have not commented. When Roy Moore was running for Senate, he was accused of having sexual relations with teenagers as young as 14 years old, allegations that he has denied.
Jeff Goldblum was in London doing what?
He was promoting a new jazz album.
I've got a jazz album. I had to go do that.
He's...
Who wants to listen to my jazz album? Anyone? Anyone?
Look at my fingers on the keyboard.
I'd love to have some fish and chips.
Jeff Goldblum is maybe my favorite person to interview of all time.
He's a complete nut, right?
He is completely unpredictable in such a good way. He's hilarious. He's funny, but he's also very warm and very sweet at the same time.
Good dancer?
I've never actually danced with him, but maybe I'll try that next time. I bet he would love to dance with me.
Mm-hmm.
He has this new jazz album coming out, and instead of just, you know, making the rounds on the TV shows, he goes to London, and in front of a busy commuter train station, they wheel out Elton John's piano out onto the street, and he's playing the piano for people out on the street. And this is just a few blocks away from where that 25-foot giant statue of Jeff Goldblum lounging is parked on the banks of the river.
The Thames?
The Thames River with the London Bridge towers.
Yeah.
Right there. Gigantic, seductive... lounging Jeff Goldblum statue.
It's kind of cool. Paul McCartney is 76 years old, and he's kicking off another tour. What do we need to know about this?
Well, he is kicking off another tour, but he is also kicking off. He's going to be doing a free YouTube concert tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. So if you go to YouTube, search Paul McCartney, 7 o'clock Chicago time, and he's going to do a concert just for YouTube.
Let's go. That's very cool.
It's very cool. You can catch catch the show. Who doesn't want to see that on your 1-inch iPhone screen?
And Vanity Fair's best dress list is out. Where do I rank?
Steve, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that both you and I did not make
the
list this
I think
year.
Sometimes when you've been on the list a lot before, they keep you off just putting new people on.
I've worn pants for 3 straight days in the hopes that the announcement would be today.
Vanity Fair fake news.
Dean, when I reminded Steve yesterday that he was going to have to wear pants again today because he has to do the photo thing, he was so disappointed.
I was very sad.
I love how it sounds like you don't wear pants other days. I know what you mean, that you wear shorts.
I wear shorts from April 1st to Halloween, basically.
No, you do during the Christmas months.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to. So who is the best dressed?
Well, they did not list them, 1 through 10, but they just have a list of the people who are on this list.
Give me those.
Including Amal Clooney.
That's my number one. She's my number one.
She's stunning.
Stunning.
She dresses.
Tracy
impeccable.
Ellis Ross.
She also dresses.
Blackish.
Sure.
Yeah, very stylish.
Serena Williams is on the list.
She can do no wrong. She can do no wrong.
Yara Shahidi.
Yep, she's pretty.
Yeah.
Good clothes.
Who else? Bella Hadid.
Oh, did you see her at the U.S. Open? She and her sister Gigi were there. They were wearing shirts that were falling off. It was. I'll show you the photo.
Oh, you know I hate looking at stuff like that.
So best dressed and best undressed, apparently.
Yeah. Are those Hadids like the new Kardashians? I mean, who are they?
They're the Hadids.
Their mom is a famous model. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're all gorgeous.
Yeah, they're really...
But what do they do?
They're models.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they date famous people, too.
Right. So they're very Kardashian-ish.
That's all you need to know, really. Yeah. That's all you really need to do in life.
Any surprises on the list?
Like all you young kids out there, that's really all you need to accomplish in your life.
Like Vic Tayback, was he on the list? Any surprises?
Tayback did also.
Dean, are there any princesses on the list?
It turns out that Meghan Markle is also on the list.
No Pippa?
No Pippa. No.
She's
no
pregnant Pippa. This year, oh, maybe, right. So there.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you.
See
you. And movies from Dean tomorrow. We're back with the headlines.
Dean is off tomorrow because he's in Toronto.
That's my point. He's gone tomorrow.
Yeah, so I think we're going to talk to Lauren Zima for Entertainment Tonight.
Well, we like Lauren.
Strong transition.
We'll get Dean on Monday, though.
Sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
I forgot to do this with Dean. I got a pair of tickets to Legally Blonde, the musical, the high fashion kickoff to Paramount Theater's Broadway season. Plays now through October 21st. You want tickets? I don't care if you're blonde or not. Seventh caller wins. You can go to ParamountAurora.com to get your tickets. Call the box office at 630-896-6666. But if you can go and you'd like the tickets free for me, well, call that number, 312-981-7200, and be the seventh caller right now. Swap meet time, Justin.
That's right. It's time. If you've got memorabilia, if you've got collectibles, anything that you want to get evaluated, Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker is here with us as he is every Thursday. Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Great to be here.
By the way, you're sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Yes. You're out at Wolf's Flea Market when?
Every Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 4 p.m. in the Palatine location.
Okay. I wanted to let you know, I wasn't here last week, so I didn't get a chance, but my dad gave me all my Star Wars toys.
Nice.
He gave them back, and so what is a C-3PO without a leg going for these
days?
Well,
I should know that's your modus operandi. There's always something missing or torn. If it's the earlier 70, like 77, 78 Mego brand,
it's just missing a couple
limbs. People still need the parts, so it's still worth something, yeah.
How about a chewed Luke Skywalker Winter Edition, the one when Empire Strikes Back?
Right. Who chewed it?
I'm assuming I did. It's just chewed.
Like an oral fixation
thing. Yeah, it's chewed.
People will need the parts, they'll still buy it.
I'm just saying that, I'm looking at these, I'm like, this may be worth something if it wasn't chewed and a leg was missing.
Patrick chews on everything at our house, including the remote control, and then we say...
What does your husband chew on? Does he chew on stuff, too? Like, he gnaws on the furniture?
No, he does bite his nails, though.
Hmm.
He tells me that all geniuses bite their nails.
Yeah. Do you think maybe you're making everyone in your house nervous?
That could be.
Yeah. I like that. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can call. You can text. If you got something you want to brag about or memorabilia you want to see what it's worth, now's the time to call because Greg is here. And he's also brought some examples of some collectibles.
What do you got?
I tried to bring in items that are in people's garage or attic so they could see the potential.
Like their relatives and things?
Well, that's where I rate it. Yeah, I rate it.
You have a box here from my childhood of something that has been deemed illegal in all 50 states.
Right.
I think we're going to have to do a citizen's arrest just for the fact that you're carrying this around.
I don't know how I got through security, but I did.
And what is it?
It's they're called jarts. Yep. So it's basically darts and lawn darts. Basically.
For younger listeners, think Game of Thrones death spikes with aerodynamic fins on them.
Exactly. and they're a thing on eBay where to sell them on eBay, people list the empty box. And it's kind of like a wink-wink thing that, okay, the jarts will be inside the box, but they don't put that anywhere.
So they don't show. They just say, empty box, and it's this much value. What are they going for? What are jarts
upwards of like $90 to $100. Wow. This was probably a $50 set because of the condition of the box.
But. I love that it shows on the back the directions, the trajectory you have to throw the jart.
Yeah.
Right.
10 to 12 inches above the lawn.
Yeah.
So I could see where if you...
There is a warning on it.
What's the warning say?
Not a toy for use by children. May cause serious or fatal injury. Read instructions carefully. Keep out of reach of children.
Yeah, no, listen. I played with this all the time as a kid.
We all did.
Children should not play with this.
No.
It's just...
I had a friend of mine put one through his hand.
Yeah.
Wow. Really? About it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's not just a myth. It's not an urban legend.
No. This is how we lost my cousin Dougie.
Don't ever play with your brother.
With your brother?
No.
Probably close to a deadly weapon, as I'll bring
and
in.
And the caution on the back says you read the instructions inside, and if you need replacement instruction sheets, you could call 516-234-2800 and ask for customer service, and they'll send you new instructions.
I'm thinking that number's probably not working anymore.
Probably not.
I also noticed you brought in some C4 explosive.
right, yeah. If we have time, we can get into
it. What else do you have?
I brought in a Life magazine. This one, Muhammad Ali on the cover, is his comeback. And this is about $15, but some of his other... This is 60...
Wow, it's in great shape.
1970, sorry.
It's in great shape.
October of 70, yeah. So it's in great shape. It's probably about $14, $15.
Okay.
And a couple Elvis 45s that were the hardcover sleeves, and these are about $15 each.
These items smell like musty.
That's how you know it's good, right?
That's how you know
it's money to me, man. When I smell that, that's money.
The smell of money. I love it.
What are you looking for this weekend?
You know, the big secret this weekend is Bridgeview Treasure Days, and I really shouldn't say it because it's going to get crowded now, but it's always crowded anyway, but it's the town-wide, and it's really an event, and it's something that I'm taking off of Palatine Saturday to go in the morning.
So it's the whole town does
garage sales? Yeah, it's the whole town. They have a float. What? They have this like pirate ship float that goes through the blocks and hands out candy, and then it's just every home is a
bring
garage
out your junk.
Every home.
Bring
it's
out
just
your
park
junk.
The car and just walk.
Wow,
and,
cool.
Yeah, and I find some great stuff
there. Carry a wagon, like a dragon?
I should, but I just kind of lose the blood circulation in my fingers from jewel bags or plastic bags, you know.
Such an interesting life. And when I say interesting, it's...
I'm living the dream.
Coming up, what's a Danny Bonaducci boxing glove set worth? Mm. And that must be DeCastro. some other things you want to know about. 312-981-7200 is the number. Back with Greg Flamm. He's going to be at Wolf's Flea Market every weekend until the end of time. And people can follow you on social media or follow you home.
Yeah, they have. And can I give a shout out to Rich and Barbara and Tom? They were generous and they were cleaning out their house and they just dropped off a bunch of
really
cool stuff. Yeah,
no kidding.
So I'm hoping to sell it, maybe kick them back a few bucks. So I want to say thank you for that.
Jarts? Were there any jarts in that?
The jarts, were from Tom.
There you go.
That was a couple days ago.
How about any chewed... Star Wars.
No, didn't get that far.
Cindy is in Fox Lake. Cindy, what do you have to sell?
I have a metal sign that we believe to be about 100 years old. Wow. We moved out of Chicago last year, and it happened to be on the floor of the attic. We lived there 30 years and didn't know it was there.
Wow.
And it's two-sided. One side says Don Herr's Garage. He raced in the Indianapolis 500 1911 as a backup driver.
Wow. Cool.
And the other side refers to a new guarantee building, which was built back around that time, 1920.
Well, she's got something worth a lot of money here.
It is. We could be talking over $1,000.
Nice!
Probably. Did you not know it was in there? Did you just discover that?
And the
When we were cleaning out the attic to move, my husband just thought it was a board on the floor.
So she should contact you, right?
Color, and
yeah,
he's like,
that's awesome. I'd love to see if you can send a picture to DuPage Picture.
Actually, Sydney, hold on. Let me connect you, because Pete will talk to you off the air.
All right.
And then send us $900. Let's go to Mary in North Center. Mary, I used to work with Danny Bonaducci. What do you have of his?
Oh, really? I have a pair of autographed Everlast boxing gloves.
He tried to give me his cup. is this from when he fought Donny Osmond?
No, right. It's from a Halloween costume contest that he was a judge at, and okay. I won them.
All right. Danny Bonaducci autographed boxing gloves.
Hey, what was the costume you won for?
I was a Grecian birdbath.
Did the water work?
No, that's probably why I came in second.
That's funny.
That's awesome. If you had a correct plumbing, you would have been number one.
Danny's
obviously, nothing to compare that to, so you'll have to just start an auction, maybe like start at $50 or $100.
What do you mean? You don't have other child star boxing gloves?
No, nothing else on eBay. Sorry.
I think $1,000. I think everything's $1,000. Yeah. Maria's in Gurnee. This is interesting. Go ahead, Maria.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, I have a newspaper I just happened to think about. It's one where it's an original newspaper from Kennedy's assassination.
And is it the Chicago Tribune or a different paper? Or what is it?
You know what? I don't know. I never thought about that. Yeah. I've been taking the Daily Herald for years, so it could either be the Waukegan News Sun or the Daily Herald. I'm not.
Wasn't really there something called the Chicago Daily Herald at one point?
Daily News,
the Chicago Herald. All right, hold on.
Maria, what's interesting about that too, just from doing this, is that we all collect newspapers.
Right.
There's a lot of when there's big events, so they're not as.
I see the JFK one every week at an estate sale. The
what did you
moon landing?
Come on, you seem to be very complicit in this.
I guess I do. Yeah.
What's it? So it's
but
not
right.
Worth,
like
it's just very common. Space shuttle or
so. Hold on, it's a cool thing to hold on to.
It's more just something to hang on to, but it's really not worth that much.
Okay, because I think everything today is worth $1,000.
Yeah, $1,000 day.
Tom's in Westmont. Yeah, Tom.
Tom in Westmont.
Yeah, how you doing? Tom, what do you got, Tom?
Yeah, I got late 60s, early 70s. The 7-Up glasses. They're upside down.
Right.
You know, they're not the traditional glass. There's four of them in the original box.
If
it's a gun cola on them, and then the other side, the 7-Up insignia is upside down.
It would be $250 a piece.
Yeah, I have a couple of those in my booth without the box. So if you have the box, maybe $15 to $20 with the box.
For all four?
No, each one.
What about plastic cool glasses from my roommate in college who got them when he bought cigarettes?
Probably a little bit less than the plastic cups from Taco Bell, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, those are good.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to have you talk to these other folks off the air, if you don't mind, before you leave.
Sure.
There's somebody from Medicine Park that has an old McDonald's sign. I don't know if it's old McDonald the farmer or an actual giant M from a McDonald's. And all the Lucy episodes on VHS, can't play them anywhere, but you can own them all.
Yeah, there are certain VHS that are still worth money, like Hee Haw was never released, I guess, on DVD, so the VHS are worth money.
Good God, what a nightmare. I saw every episode of Hee Haw.
Growing up, that's...
Ed from Carol Stream has a wire recorder. I don't know what that is.
Well,
like an old wire recorder, I suppose.
Yep.
All right, so Greg Flam, Wolf's Flea Market, and this weekend he's going to be pulling a wagon around what neighborhood?
Bridgeview, in the morning. I'll be back in Palatine probably by noon or 1 on Saturday.
We always like having you in, and thank you again at Wolf's Flea Market.
See you, buddy.
Thank you.
We are coming back in just a moment, and of course, what I want to tell you is coming up the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from Northwestern Medicine's newsroom on WGN Radio.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Hi to everybody on CLTV, and welcome back to America's finest radio studio, even on a cloudy, rainy, nasty day, where we're being told it's the worst commute in Chicago history. So apologies for that.
Is the weather naughty?
Dave, is the weather naughty? Let's go to naughty Dave.
Yes, there's a high level of naughtiness today in the weather.
case you missed that.
I don't know why you guys think that's so funny.
Because a grown man saying the word naughty is always funny.
I don't know. Walk of Famer saying the word naughty.
I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, you are on the Walk of Fame. Have some pride for crying out loud.
Change I like it.
Got it.
Well, I can't wait for the call. You got to sneak it in on Saturday.
We'll see how it goes.
Northwestern.
We'll bring back the phrase that pays tomorrow with Coach Fitz because always enjoyed it.
Long. We did a naughty play.
Stephanie Lieber's here, new executive director of Immerman Angels. Immerman Angels, I mean, I met you guys 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I'm trying to remember now.
Three, yeah.
And love the organization. So let's start there first with the congratulations on the gig. Thank you. Oh, let me get your mic on. It might help. Congratulations on the new job.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
What were you doing before?
I was at Chicago Children's Museum for many, many moons, 15 years.
And you said, I am so tired of these kids.
No, I love it there. Great organization.
It is a great organization.
I moved to another good one, too.
Oh, this one's fabulous. Explain what Immerman Angels is.
Sure. Immerman Angels is a cancer support organization. We do, we provide free peer-to-peer cancer support for cancer fighters, cancer survivors, and caregivers.
Peer-to-peer meaning people that have walked the walk and they know what you're dealing with?
People who have walked the walk. As we have heard over and over again, talking to and being engaged with someone who has experienced what you are going through is really meaningful. And even those who have great support networks, they want to talk to someone who's been there.
Yeah, because we all know somebody and love somebody who's gone through this, and you can't love them hard enough to understand what they're dealing with specifically. And to sit down with somebody who has your cancer is much more effective than somebody coming up and you go, you know, my aunt had this.
Exactly. You should try this.
Yeah. How does the peer-to-peer thing work? Where do you get the peers that volunteer to be, you know, counselors of sorts?
Absolutely. Mentor angels, we call them. So we have a vast network of mentor angels. We actually have the largest network of cancer survivors who provide this type of mentorship anywhere. So we're thrilled that we have that kind of community to support. But we get them from a variety of ways. We partner with hospitals. We partner with cancer organizations. Word of mouth is a huge piece of our work.
So all sorts of referrals.
All sorts of coming on shows like this to get the word out and let people know.
Sure.
It seems many people, survivors, is it innate for them to want to give their experience back? I mean, is that easy? Is there a playbook that, that you as an organization say, okay, this is how we want you to tell your story? So tell us a little bit about how that works.
Yeah. So like a cancer diagnosis, there's sort of no playbook for anyone in any experience. And that's why we really have a personalized approach to matching people. A 36-year-old woman who has stage 3 ovarian cancer is having a very different experience than a 69-year-old man who has liver cancer. So we want to make sure we talk to the cancer fighters. We talk to the survivors. We ask them about their experience, their treatment, what's important to them, and what they're hoping to get from this engagement and from this relationship.
Do you find that the medical community has caught up in terms of the hospitals and the practitioners to understand how much support means in fighting cancer?
Absolutely. There's been a ton of research recently about the importance of psychosocial support and how cancer fighters are really improving. Their life is better. Their sense of hope and the diminishing sense of helplessness is improved by talking to someone who has been there and done that.
You talk about survivors. What are previvors?
Previvors, yes. Yeah. So those are people who actually haven't had a cancer diagnosis but are predisposed, genetically predisposed or high risk to have any type of cancer.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of work recently. We just launched a really terrific, exciting partnership with Bright Pink, who deal a lot with the previvor community with breast and ovarian cancer. And we also work with an organization called Alive and Kicking. So we are launching in much more to that community.
I know another concern of Immerman Angels are caregivers. There's a tremendous amount of stress in those that take care of those that are sick. There's also the families, the extended families, the siblings who don't get enough attention at times. What are you doing for them?
Absolutely. So that's sort of one of the lesser known facts about Immerman Angels as part of our mentorship is for caregivers. Those are the folks who are often lost in the shuffle. They are the people who are providing the day-to-day on-the-ground support. My mom is a 38-year breast cancer survivor.
Wow.
So I have
God bless.
Lived the world of being the daughter of a cancer survivor, and so I feel this particularly personally, having watched her go through that battle and making sure that we're providing the same type of resources for those that are supporting the cancer.
What have you learned from your own experience, from being personally involved with your mother's fight? that you bring to this job?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think one of the things that I've realized is that everyone's experience is different. There are caregivers who are looking for support from someone who's an only child. There are caregivers who only want to talk to someone who's who has dealt with the same type of cancer. Everyone's cancer experience, both as a cancer fighter, as a cancer survivor, and as a caregiver, is different. And we at Immerman Angels really want to make sure that we take a personalized approach to talking to all those folks and matching them up with the person who will best meet their needs and give them the support they need.
This is free.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, where are you getting your money? We got to give you some money for something.
We always need money. I'm a fundraiser by training. Yes, we have lots of opportunities to support.
I know the big gala is coming up. That's not the only thing you do all year. What's the website?
The website is ImmermanAngels.org.
So if you can't go to the gala, you should check back throughout the year.
Absolutely, there are opportunities all year long. We
got corporate bigwig stepping up here.
Sorry, what?
Corporate big shots stepping up here.
We are working on that. Yes, we have a lot of terrific corporate partners, and those numbers are growing every day. So always lots of ways to be engaged and to support.
There is a cool a bunch of things that you can get in the raffle and auction prizes and different things, a Chicago Blackhawks experience.
Oh,
and
yes.
We can tell you from being the Blackhawk station that that's something you're going to want to be a part of.
Yes.
Tell people why it's called Immerman Angels.
Absolutely. So Johnny Immerman is the founder of Immerman Angels. I think probably half the audience listening right now has met Johnny. He's been given a hug by Johnny on the street. Mm-hmm. He is a two-time testicular cancer survivor. He started this organization with his buddy John May about 12 years ago to help make sure that no one faces cancer alone. He had a vast network of family and friends who were there for him. He wanted to make sure that that other people had that kind of support and that people had the support from folks who had been there and walked the walk.
Now, Dave, you've had this as a scare with skin cancer and stuff. Did you talk to other people with skin cancer? I mean, does it help to do that?
It would.
Yeah.
I didn't, wasn't aware and wasn't sure where to go, and sure. I would think that it would have been very helpful for me.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter how much everybody else loves you, they don't know what you're going through.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's precisely why we're here.
There's obviously the physical, mm-hmm. When you talk about treatment, mm-hmm. and whether it be radiation or chemotherapy, yeah. but there's a mental component as well about being isolated,
yep.
and things like depression and other things that fall. When you're coming up with options of how you're going to do peer-to-peer, mm-hmm. do you have to assess where a patient might be, mm-hmm. needing more help on the mental side than maybe on the physical side, vice versa?
Yeah, it's part of what we talk to the cancer fighters about when they call us. We talk to them about what they're looking for, what they need, where they are in the process, and we try to meet them where they are. And we do some terrific training with the mentors to make sure that they know what the sort of level of support that's needed and appropriate for each individual case.
866-IMMERMAN, 866-463-7626, or immermanangels.org. Spell it immermanangels.org. The gala's when?
It's coming up September 15th, Saturday.
Next Saturday.
Yeah,
Saturday. You got 10 days left to get people.
We have 10 days left, so come and join me.
And it's at that dive, the Four Seasons.
Exactly.
Yeah. Best place to get tickets?
Online or call the number and we'll help you out.
Plus, you're everywhere.
Yeah, well, just I was going to say, wave to me street. On the street. I'll sell you a ticket there.
Yeah. Immerman Angels, again, a wonderful organization. We're happy to promote it here and on CLTV. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
14-hour commute to come in here, but it's worth it.
It sure was.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. Purple Rain.
Come on, sway with me. My friend John Heffron and I did a radio show together in Detroit. And then he went on and he won Last Comic Standing. And he got offered a bunch of development deals to be a big shot sitcom star. And I think he did a pilot or two. And then he went, man, I really hate acting. You're still one of the best stand-ups in the country by far. If you ever get a chance to see John, you got to see him. And he joins me now on the phone. You know, I just realized you left me a message the other day. I'm a big loser. I'm sorry I didn't call you back.
You didn't call me back, Steve, but I just want to let you know it's 70 degrees, and from North Ave to Armitage, we're backed up probably pretty much the whole way, just to let you know. Maybe 12 to 13 cars, people just staring at their phones, not driving.
You know, I really, you know,
or I would be. And how was that? I was auditioning for your traffic.
Yeah, I don't like your chances.
I know it was a little choppy.
A little choppy. Now, I assume you're staying out in Schaumburg, and a good friend would have called you this morning and said, dude, don't even try the commute. Just stay there. But now I'm giving you full permission to turn around and go back to your hotel.
Yeah, we're halfway, so now we're at this thing. I'm like, now what do we do? I'm so 50 minutes late from seeing you, but I appreciate you. It's always good when a comic doesn't phone her, because you know what we like? It's just the connection is so much it's just better.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
Than actually being in person.
Oh, totally.
Making eye contact, being able to shake somebody's hand. I just enjoy being on the phone when it's raining,
right.
Knowing that I had to wake up to be on the phone, where I could have been doing this in my onesie back at the hotel.
Yeah, I like how you piped in the rain sound effects, because I know you're back at your hotel still. So, you know, you get that going for you.
I'm actually in Los Angeles. It's 90 degrees and warm outside. I'm having my pool boy just splash water on. And then hopefully I'll fly in for my service tonight.
You never
got back to me. I know it's tough.
Yeah, I'm a very big star. It's hard for me to return phone calls. Now, I forgot the story completely, but I think I know this part of it. When you lived in Chicago back in the day, am I right about this? Didn't you live either right next to the L tracks, or were you under the track? Were you on the tracks?
I lived in Lincoln Park on Armitage and Sheffield, right above Kincaid's Bar. So there's Kincaid's Bar,
and then there's
a window right next to the L track. And a couple things I would do. One is I had a guitar CD of just somebody playing like the electric guitar with no singing.
Uh-huh.
And I had a guitar, and I would turn my back towards everybody waiting to get onto the L. So they would look into my apartment and hear me shredding, but it was actually a CD playing off of the speaker, and people would knock on my window and be like, bro, you're awesome. Are you doing any shows in town? And then I would turn my back. I'd be like, man, I'm just a venture capitalist. And then another time, we'd have so many people knock on the window to ask for, hey, do you have like a Pepsi or Coke, or do you have any chips or anything?
And
my roommates at the time were like, are we allowed to open a store right here? Can we just open up like a weird convenience store?
I mean, why not? Why not?
Like, why not?
I know you're happily married now, but did you pick up any women that way?
I tried with the guitar thing.
Yeah.
The only girl I ever tried to pick up the entire time I lived in Chicago is they had the Chicago. Well, I forgot the name of it. The beer run. So you basically run like a half a marathon only to eat hot dogs and drink beer afterwards, right? That's like something you do younger, then you realize, or I could skip the running part and just drink beer and eat hot dogs.
Yeah, both of those are strong moves.
Right, so, but when I was younger, and I remember being in that area of Lincoln Park, and I told this girl that I was a runner, like, I run pretty long distances. She's like, well, you should do the beer run thing with me, whenever it was. And I was like, maybe a half a mile in, and I went, yeah, no girls work this. I'm not going to even fake that I can finish this thing. And I just turned left down some street and kept running, and then took off my number tag, and I think I drank beer and ate hot dogs later. I don't know what happened to that girl.
All right, last thing before I ask you for the plug. I just brought up Danny Bonaducci on the air a little bit ago. You and I both worked with him. Have you got a favorite Danny Bonaducci story that you can tell on the air?
You want me to hear my favorite? I think you know it, but I mean, there's so many.
But it's one that's arable. People don't understand this. 95% of the stories about Danny cannot be told on the air.
Oh, my gosh. So I used to, at a radio station in town, I used to fly in with him in Chicago, and I'd be on with him. There was one story where he took off his shirt in the station that both me and you were at, were adult AC. So it was like mom rock type stuff. So we
mom rock.
Match, we were at like a Matchbox 20 concert, me and Danny, and we're walking by, and somebody said, "Your guys' morning show sucks," right? So Danny said, "What'd you say?" And he takes off his shirt. He's one of those guys, like, for some reason, you have to fight with no shirt off. You can't, like, I would fight wearing whatever clothes I have on.
Sure.
Like, disrobing. I'm just lazy. I'm not gonna untie a shoe or
right.
take off a shirt. So he challenged an entire row of people. So we're like row JJ. And it's one of those concerts we were forced to go to with the radio station. We had a bad tent set up with old station logos, not even the logo of the current station, you know, koozies from three morning shows prior to us
being intern. I've done that gig.
You know, intern that doesn't even want to be there, and some gum spread around the table so it didn't look horrible. So it was that environment. And Danny takes off his shirt and challenges the entire row. It was row JJ, and said, if anybody in that row wants to fight him, line up and we'll start doing. But the funny thing is, we're at a Matchbox 20 concert, which those... Maybe a Yanni concert would be the next safest concert to be at, where right. you weren't worried somebody, you know, if the Philharmonic is in town, probably a chance you're not going to fight in the stands at that thing.
All right, so...
Siberian Orchestra, whatever that...
Yeah, the Christmas
probably
people.
Not going to fight.
Yeah, so if you want to find out if Danny fought anybody, you got to see John's show this weekend. I assume you're at the Improv.
I'm at the Improv. Six shows starting tonight through Sunday.
You're doing six shows, so one, two, two, and one.
Yeah, I do one tonight, two tomorrow, two the next day, and then one the other day.
ChicagoImprov.com, if I remember correctly, for the website, right?
Yeah. I'm sure that's it. Why would that not be it?
Yeah. All right, buddy. I miss you. I'll actually call you later.
Well, yeah, you definitely, because I will be in Chicago for a full week doing nothing, and I would like to talk to you about it. Maybe I could come in.
Oh, definitely. Come in and hang out.
If you need me to pull news from the fax machine. You still get faxes? Is that a thing?
You know, it's been a while since you've been on the radio. We have computers and everything now.
Is there still a cruise for women only with Rick Springfield? Is that still a thing?
Yes. Yes, we're doing that as well.
Including the Blowfish and Dishwalla still in concert?
Yeah, you got it. I'm that guy. Same station. All right, hold on. You've won nothing but the plug. ChicagoImprov.com. It's my friend John Heffern. Very funny. And you should see him. See him this weekend. And you know what? We will have him in next week. I'm coming next week and hang out.
Sure, after you ignore his voicemail again. I've been in that position where you've ignored my voicemail, so I feel for John. Also,
well, listen, if anybody else wants to be ignored, call me.
I love Matchbox 20, by the way. Slide, that's like one of my favorites.
And you would have fought Danny Bonaducci.
So you need to eat some apples real quick here.
All right, so we have three apples. This is our final round to see who gets into the playoffs. Sandberg, who won on the first day?
The Kiku.
The
Pop
Kiku.
Likes the Kiku.
And the second day?
The second day, you liked the gala? Was that what it was?
Yeah, it was the gala.
Yeah.
I thought it was the Koru.
No, it was not the Koru.
I think it was the Koru. I'm with Dave.
He doesn't like the Koru or the Kanzi, and so now you have three more apples.
And we're super pressed on time, so I'm going to have to make this quick.
These apples are
blindfolded again.
How's he going to be able to discern which apple is which?
He's combining apples in his mouth.
Yeah, this is no good. This is totally unfair to the Koru
and the Kanzi.
This style. This is better. This is speed blind test.
We'll come back and we'll tell you which one I like.
Oh, you probably need to say. Oh no, do you? Are you good?
In just a second. Are we going straight to this? Okay.
No.
It's Walter's Perspective, sponsored by. That's a lot of apple. HearingHealthCenter.com.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, so you're a huge Matchbox 20 fan?
That would be incorrect.
I'm just curious because I'm looking at some text here.
Slide is a Goo Goo Dolls song, not right. Matchbox 20. One of 900 texts that have come in. Do you like the Goo Goo Dolls?
I love the Goo Goo Dolls. I'm saying the wrong band. It is the Goo Goo Dolls, and Slide was like my favorite song.
Goo Goo Dolls and Matchbox 20, they do sound very similar.
They're similar,
It was a cover.
Yeah.
No, I mean the names. They sound very similar.
And I'm just seeing that Goo Goo Dolls is going to be at the Chicago Theater on Friday. October.
But you're going to be at the Matchbox 20 concert, so you won't be able to enjoy it.
I Matchbox 20.
Well done.
So, thank you, texters.
All right. We got a very important Navy SEAL story coming up we want to talk to you about. We have the Apple reveal now, and Pete is here. Pete, the round three of the playoffs is complete. Tomorrow, the finals, where we'll have the first day and second day winner against the third day winner. From third to first, I've not done the reveal yet. You want to come over and peel?
I do.
This is third. That's third.
This is a third place apple.
Third place apple in this morning's competition.
I'm very angry.
You're angry at the stickers.
I'm angry because, well, it's a Kanzi again.
Is it a Kanzi again? Third place?
You tried to trick him, huh? You tried to trick him with another Kanzi?
Fantastic. Hold on, I'm trying to get
Don't
you know the taste of it by now?
Yeah. At least there's some consistency.
I didn't buy
Cochran.
His first read on it, so I slipped it.
Well, now you have to, right?
Kanzi third.
Kanzi third. I stole him.
Nice job, Steve.
Well, you know.
You're consistent.
I'm nothing
if
not consistent.
Yeah.
All right, your second choice is a Rainier Pink Lady.
Oh, the Pink Lady was second.
Pink Lady.
Which means the winner is right here. The winner is a is it a Fuji? The winner is a Fuji. I'm not looking at the sticker.
So we got a Kiku versus a Fuji versus a Gala.
A Kiku, a Gala, and a Fuji. And Kanzi sitting in the stands watching it all happen.
That's actually not a Fuji. It's a Koru. I snuck in, switched the label on the Apple, and that was then covered up.
Join us tomorrow for the exciting Apple Finals. Dave will call it live. It's going to be a thrill.
I want to be a Navy SEAL. I want to be a Navy SEAL. I want to cut off all of my hair. I want to cut off all of my hair. I want to be a Navy SEAL. I want to be a Navy SEAL. Run with me if you dare. Run with me if you dare.
My friend Pat Brady's back. Pat Brady knows Bill Strong. Bill and Sandy Strong are presenting a 2018 Midwest Evening of Tribute for the Navy SEAL Foundation. I've been a regular contributor to the Navy SEAL Foundation. They do wonderful work. And you want to introduce our guest for us here?
Yeah, you know, I'll let Bill Strong do that. Bill, you want to introduce...
Let me go to Bill here first and get him on the radio. First off, Bill, hi, how are you?
I'm doing terrific, Steve. Thanks for having us on.
And by the way, condolences on Senator McCain. I know you were close.
Well, thank you very much. He was a special American who loved this country, as do the Navy SEALs. So, a good man.
Thursday, September 6th. Well, that'd be tonight, wouldn't it? Where are you guys going to be?
We're going to be at the Hilton Hotel. We're sold out. It's going to be another record evening. But one of the things we'd like to do, obviously, is encourage your listeners to donate to us online. So if I can very, you know, sinisterly get in the email address would be www.NavySealFoundation.org/Chicago/. We'd welcome any contribution of any size. It'd be terrific.
Yeah, the closest I'll ever be to a Navy SEAL is contributing to the Navy SEAL Foundation, and I'm happy to do it.
I've got to interrupt you a second. I was a little bit closer this morning because Admiral Harward, who's on this morning on this call, conducted a workout from 6:30 to 8 a.m. I barely survived.
And he is your keynote speaker tonight.
Yes, sir.
Vice Admiral and, of course, SEAL, Robert S. Harward Jr. joins us right now. And, Admiral, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
How was that 90-minute workout?
We had a lot of fun, and don't listen to Bill. He set the standard this morning.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you for your service to America, and condolences to you as well on losing your fellow Navy man, John McCain.
Yeah, he's one of our shipmates, a Naval Academy grad, dedicated his entire life to service to our country, like a lot of my shipmates. So we're proud of him. We loved him. And we'll always miss him, but we'll never forget him.
You know, the extent of our knowledge, too many of us, the Navy SEALs, begins and ends with, oh, yeah, those are the guys that got bin Laden. What do the rest of us need to know?
Well, It's a small group, actually. There are only about 2,500 of us. And what you really need to know, the guys who do it, just like Senator McCain, they dedicate their lives to service to this country. And for the last 18 years while we've been at war, they've been a strategic component of our efforts to hunt down those who attacked us in 9/11 and wished to do us harm. And so they paid a very heavy price. And we've lost a lot of our shipmates. But tonight is really intended to recognize and support those families who have sacrificed so much in supporting those SEALs. I mean, people come up to me all the time and say, hey, thank you for your service. Well, it's almost embarrassing because I loved it. I loved every day of what I did. But what I wish they knew is who my family would were so they could tell them that. I moved them around every year or two for 36 years. My one daughter went to four different high schools in three states, and I was gone all the time. And so tonight's really about recognizing them, thanking them, and as Bill said, and thanks to Bill, supporting them. So these contribution donations go to help those families when they lose, when we lose our SEALs, and help those kids with schools and efforts like that. And so I can't tell you how important the support is, both financially and just emotionally, because now they realize people know who they are and care for them.
Pat Taylor.
Hello, Admiral. Hey, what's on tap for tonight at the Hilton?
Well, we're going to have a great get together. We're going to talk about the foundation, talk about what SEALs do, and in a very granular manner so people understand it, because I don't think people really understand. And then we're just going to have a lot of camaraderie and a lot of fun.
You know, Bill, I just wanted to mention, I through a couple of friends who are also contributors, I actually linked up with another organization supporting the SEALs, which I don't know if you guys are aware, but there's something called Your Grateful Nation, and it's yourgratefulnation.org. And what they do, speaking of education, is the Navy SEAL Foundation supports education so heavily. When a Navy SEAL comes home, they help that Navy SEAL get a mentor and find a job. So there are folks out there who are extending the mission of the Navy SEAL Foundation.
Well, we obviously welcome and admire any organization that supports our warriors, whether Navy SEALs or otherwise in the military. Anyone who served in uniform deserves our support. I will say about the Navy SEAL Foundation that it's been ranked in the top 0.6% of all charities in the United States based upon efficiency, transparency. And about 3 weeks ago, this was unexpected, but we didn't know the survey was coming out. The Navy SEAL Foundation was ranked the number one charity in the United States that supports military families and active servicemen. And so we're very pleased with that. And so as someone who's been raising money for the Navy SEAL Foundation, I'd like to tell our investors, our contributors, that we're a very efficient user of their money.
Well, you and Sandy ought to be very proud of what you've done as well.
Honored to do it. Really, it's been fun.
Hey, Admiral, can you ask Steve Cochran a question in Farsi?
Right on.
As you know, I grew up in Iran, so sure. Is he a Farsi speaker?
Yeah. Something like that.
Admiral, I'm barely an English speaker. thank you both for coming on, and good luck tonight. I know the event sold out, but you could salute the Navy SEAL simply by going to the Navy SEAL Foundation website and making a contribution of any size, because it's all appreciated and it all goes to work like you can't believe. So don't just do it tonight. Think about the Navy SEAL Foundation all year long. And thank you both again for your time and your work.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care, gentlemen.
I'd say what, there's not two finer men, Bill Strong and the Admiral.
And you've talked about it before, Bill Strong. Bill Strong is a guy who's had a lot of success.
Yep.
A lot of success. And I've said this a million times. You make a lot of money. You ought to give some away, but you don't have to. And what you do with that money, I think, says a lot about who you are as a person. And Bill Strong and his wife, Sandy, have been very successful and have a great life. And they've stepped up and made the Navy SEAL Foundation, you know, what he talked about there, one of the most successful and also one of the most efficient and transparent foundations you can find.
And that's what he's all about. I mean, that's why people have so much respect for him, because you know if it's a Bill Strong run organization, it's well run, and your dollars are going.
And you hear a ton about camaraderie. He used the word camaraderie, but when it comes to the Marines or maybe Army Corps, but the Navy SEALs, I mean that is, he said only 2,500 of them.
How about that?
Well, this guy Bill told me the story when he got him recruited in the Admiral. He goes, "I will only do it if you do this workout with me."
How about that?
So this workout.
He said, "I'll do your keynote, but you got to do my workout."
Yeah, so there were 20 guys over at the hotel this morning doing it. It was an hour and a half.
I would say no.
You know what? I'd get tired. I'd get tired watching that video. It's 9:58. Coming up, Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio in just a second, Dave.
Soak up the sun. Come along with the John Williams Show and your favorite White Sox players to beautiful Riviera Maya, Mexico for Sox on the Beach this December 9th through 16th. You'll enjoy 7 nights of all-inclusive accommodations at the Iberostar Para Isolinto. 5. Did you like that? 5 days of live broadcast with John Williams.
White Lightning.
Very nice. Exclusive White Sox events like cocktail parties, beach games, and more. Your Apple Vacations package includes nonstop round-trip flight from Chicago plus hotel transfers. Book your trip today at WGNradio.com/events.
What do you got coming up, Justin?
I'm doing the interview show. Mark Baser's interview show. He's doing the interview show festival at the Hideout. He's got 2 shows. You might see his show on Channel 11. He's been in
here
before.
He's
great.
He is good.
We're doing bits tonight. He's got an awesome lineup of people tonight and tomorrow night at the Hideout, and I am part of the show tonight.
Good.
Yeah, right?
That'll be a lot of fun.
And best part, I don't have to wear a costume. Usually when I do bits and characters, I put a wig on.
Well, Stephanie's not involved then if you're not wearing a costume.
Exactly. Yeah. But 7:30 at the Hideout on the north side.
Bill and Wendy are here. How you guys doing?
Naughty.
Fantastic. Yeah, really.
Okay, just enough already.
Wendy, do you agree with me? A grown man that says naughty is always funny.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I'm sorry, Dave. It's funny. Yeah, it's always funny.
I love to watch Dave finally have to turn his back on Bill when he's doing a live read. I'm not the only one that has to do it anymore. He's silly. Bill's naughty.
But to Dave's defense, if it says it in the commercial, yeah, you're supposed to say what the commercial says.
And put some emphasis on it.
Although you can always start out the commercial like Bill does when there's crazy words. He said, "I did not write this, by the way."
Yeah. Yeah. As a warning?
Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Dave goes the other way, though. He goes more passion. He puts passion in.
What are you dreading more, the next shooter drop in the Trump destruction of America, or having to read the Pajamagram commercial in front of an entire room of people?
Well, that doesn't happen for a while.
So you're going with Trump for now?
For now.
Okay. Pajama.
What are you guys doing today?
We've got Mike Toomey coming on with us.
Never heard of him.
You've never heard of Mike Toomey? No.
Mike and I just did a show at Zany's a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you know this. He's really funny.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what else were you doing with the other hour and 55?
That's it. He's 3 hours of mic, and he's going to we'll go over the show that you did with him at Zany's.
You're going to break it down?
Chart it, yeah.
Excellent.
We got a telestrator.
You want to come back tomorrow and do this again, you guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm in.
I can't.
He's naughty.
He is naughty.
See you tomorrow.